Have all of our council and staff find their seat at the dais. We will be getting underway shortly. Well, welcome everyone. We return from a closed session, which has a couple of items regarding potential litigation and or other matters. We'll have our city attorney address anything that's reportable.
Yeah, there's no reportable action.
Okay, thank you. With that, we will call our regular session to order. We were going to go ahead with a Pledge of Allegiance. However, I would like also... Brian, if you would lead us in maybe a moment of silence for the events transpiring in Brussels, and then go ahead with the pledge. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie, here. Councilmember Sturdivant,
here.
Councilmember Kelly,
here.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno,
here.
Mayor O'Malley,
here.
All present.
Thank you. First item on the agenda is approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. First item on the agenda is a presentation, and is Lisa Fraser in the audience? If anyone representing the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and did we confirm that Lisa would be coming this evening, or anyone else?
I was under the impression that Lisa Fraser was coming. That's all
okay.
I knew.
If there's no objection by council, I'm going to put this off a little bit till after the consent calendar, and maybe even updates from the city manager, though we will do this before community forum, and see if she arrives a little bit later. No objection. We'll go ahead and on to the consent calendar item. All items... believed to be routine in nature. However, a council member or any member of the public may pull an item for further discussion before voting. Any council member or community member? Go ahead.
I'd like to pull A4.
A4, very good, thank you. Seeing none other, I'll entertain a motion on the remaining consent calendar items.
I move approval of all consent calendar items except A4.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion by Councilman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We have the Cycle de Mayo sponsorship. And we're going to have a staff report. I know we also have representatives from the Cycle de Mayo committee here as well. So do staff want to take this away before we go?
Yes, I can do a brief staff report and have a quick PowerPoint. Just want to tell you a little bit about the item. The city has been asked to sponsor the Cycle de Mayo event. At a level of $500, a little bit of history around Bike Month events and the Cycle de Mayo event. The county in particular, Rideshare and SlowCog, have taken the lead countywide on asking cities to hold bicycle education events and to promote Bike Month. The bicycle education events are part of our bike plan. They're also part of our climate action plan, and obviously part of the regional transportation plan and sustainable community strategy. The Cycle de Mayo event is planned to be held Sunday, May 16th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Templeton Park. We are doing a North County event rather than each city holding its own event or each community holding its own event. We decided to band together, or there's been discussion to band together to hold a larger event, which is the Cycle de Mayo event. The event will promote safety, social awareness, healthy communities, outdoor recreation, and bicycling in the North County. It includes a bike rally, BMX stunt show, bike decorating, family bike ride around the park, and a lot of other bike education programs. There will be adult group rides leaving from both Atascadero and Paso Robles with the intent to meet at Templeton Park. The idea is to try and bring some attention to the missing link between Templeton and Atascadero, and we don't have that link, bicycle link, between the two communities, and so this is part of that. And Kiwanis will be doing a tri-tip barbecue, sodas, water, beer, and wine. So they are asking for $500 from the city of Atascadero in order to be a co-participant with city of Paso Robles and both of our bicycle communities. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any council questions? I see Councilwoman Fonzie, followed by Councilman Sturdivant.
Rochelle, I know we had Cycle de Mayo in Atascadero itself. What was the amount that we paid when we had it sponsored here?
We've held a number of bicycle events probably the last 8 years, which is as close as I could guess. The city may have paid some small amounts for the first few years for our Bicycle Month event. We didn't really track it separately, so it was in there. They did take some staff time. In 2013, we started the Cycle de Mayo events at the Lake Park. That was actually a lot of private fundraising was done for that. We raised about $1,600 and spent about $1,500. But we did use staff time and city parks and other things. So it was still very labor intensive for the staff. In 2014, I believe a nonprofit held it, and 2015, again, a nonprofit in Templeton.
Thank you.
Councilman Sturdivant.
Is there any type of promotional advertising or for sponsors that's going to be going out with this event?
There will be some promotions and sponsorship. It'll be on the flyers and the ads that the city of Atascadero will be promoting that. So we'll be a sponsor for that. It doesn't meet our exact sponsorship criteria because it's not an event here in Atascadero, so that's why it's coming to you.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I'd just like to comment on it. First of all, I want to make it quite clear. I think this is a good event, but I do have some questions and concerns on how this has been handled by the city. We get our agendas on a Thursday or a Friday, and when I pick my agenda up, this is the report we got for a $500 request, cash. We've got these in the past, and it's almost all of the time that we don't give out cash donations. So I sent an email to the city manager asking if there was an application for this donation, where would the money go, as we've all done in the past when we request money from the Board of Supervisors or other. There's a form that you fill out. As of this morning, there's been no form of any formal request for this money. And I sit on the Finance Committee, and I think in the past, I have no problems with us helping people out within our city, you know, donating the use of the zoo and what have you. Somehow, we're already included in the advertisement, that we're already a sponsor. I don't know how this happened when it hasn't come to the city council yet for approval of this. And when you look to see where the money goes to a nonprofit up in Paso Robles. I believe it's the Paso Robles Recreation Center. And if you look down there where they spend all of their money, there's no mention of Atascadero. And on a regular basis, Atascadero, when we give money to other agencies, the county, what have you, we end up on the short end of this. And I just think we need to keep our money in town. And there's plenty of places that we can spend money on educating the kids at the school, our schools, and what have you. And I think if we want to do this in the future, I think the city council, we need to address this. And if we want to start giving cash donations out to different groups, we need to budget that and set up a procedure on how to do it. I think we might be setting a bad precedent here of giving this cash donation. I mean, so when somebody walks in, say the people on Traffic Way, they want to put an event out and they want $500, do we give them money? The lake people, Friends of the Lake, and they come, you know, do we give them the money? What is the criteria that we're going to be giving money away? As a taxpayer, I'm very concerned where my tax money goes, and that it's justified and that it's put in a good place. So I like the project. I hope you'll put that in the notes, that I like the project, so I don't get backstabbed saying Bob Kelly's against the bike deal. I don't think the procedure is in place for this city to give $500,000 cash away to an event that's going to
be I agree with you on that.
Well, don't interrupt me. Oh, did I say $500,000?
Yeah.
I think big. I'm sorry. Thank you, Tom. But anyhow, I don't like the idea of giving it to a nonprofit outside of the city, and I don't think we're going to get a good return on our investment. So I will be voting no on this just because of the procedure, not because of the event.
Okay, well, before we, this is the time for asking questions. Before we deliberate, we should certainly be listening to the public. And we do have some folks here from the public, but I wanted to review with the city manager. Again, you'd mentioned that part of the bike plan that we have and part of our relationship with other organizations, I think you have it listed here, that bicycle education events are part of the bike plan, climate action plan, regional transportation plan, sustainable communities strategy, etc. So I think that it, in that sense, the funding would be budgeted. I'm going to open it up to the public and see if there's anyone representing working on this organization. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Steve Fleury. I'm on the committee for the Cycle to Mile again this year. We did it last year. I can address a little bit of your concerns. I'm also on the Rec Foundation in Paso Robles. I live in Templeton. The Rec Foundation is the fiduciary for this event. It is actually also a sponsor of the event. At our meeting last week, we are sponsoring the event to the tune of $500, and that's coming out of our Salinas River Trail Fund, which we have. So to put on the event, we have to have somebody be the fiduciary, and we're not a nonprofit. So for 2 years now, the Rec Foundation has agreed to do that at no cost and actually also to sponsor the event too. So what that means is when the checks are cut, they go to the Rec Foundation, and to pay for the BMX stunt show, we have to rent the park from the county because it's a county park. We have to get an alcohol license. We have to get a food license. All the different things. That's what the sponsorship money goes for. So that's all accounted for through the Rec Foundation. I don't know what else I could say about that. So the event itself, it'll be the second year of doing this, and it's basically to celebrate cycling in the North County. I think that it's to provide information on the Salinas River Trail Plan, which I think the city here supports, and that's the plan that's going to run eventually from Santa Margarita to San Miguel, and specifically to keep support going for the missing link part, which is the trail between Templeton and Atascadero, which is being environmentally engineered, I believe, right now, and hopefully we'll have money to do that from SLOCOG in the next 3 to 4 years. So that's the primary goal of this. We'll have a Salinas River Trail maps and plans there for the public to look at. We'll have a bicycle rodeo for the kids. We invite the kids from 3 school districts at this point, and I'm trying to include San Miguel. We reach out that way. Last year we had over 200 kids participate. And this year we're hoping to get maybe 400 or 500 and their families. As you said, Kiwanis puts on a barbecue. And then we have a stunt show. And this year the stunt show is going to be put on by John Parker, who's a local from Paso Robles, a famous BMXer who grew up in this area. And he's coming back to do the show this year, so I'm pretty excited about that part. I can't think of too much else other than this particular event, in my mind, brings together three communities. It brings together Paso Robles, it brings together Templeton, and it brings together Atascadero in a group celebration. I can't think of anything better than that myself. It doesn't cost a lot to put on, but it costs a few bucks to put on, and so that's why we've asked for some money. We're getting some grants from SLOCOG. Like I said, last year, we raised a couple of thousand bucks and pretty much spent it all for the event. I think that that's about it, I guess. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions from council members? Thank you. Oh, go ahead. Councilman Kelly has a question.
You said you think your budget will be $2,000?
Well, at this point, we've probably raised about $2,000. It's about going to cost that to put on the event, so.
Do you have any idea how much money? I mean, I look at the sponsors here.
Oh, I was going to address
and
that.
And I see there's a whole lot of money here if they to their past history. So, I mean, there's several thousand dollars here.
Confession time for Mr. Fleury. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can address that. Like, this particular flyer that you're looking at right now, that's what I meant to say that too, is last year's flyer, and we just put a new date on it so we could bring it and show some people what was going on.
It's just a draft example.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. So,
not unlike a Atascadero News might do.
Yeah. And in fact, Best Bike Zone is still on there, I used to own Best Bike Zone. I just sold it. So we'll be taking Best Bike Zone off of there.
This is your flyer from this year that's on the Internet.
Pardon?
I say this is your flyer for this year, or represent as being this year.
That's from the website.
As it owns,
yeah, and again, we just got the website up like on Friday, and we're still working on what's going to happen. I would tell you off the top, if you don't donate money unless you have an objection, we're going to use you as a sponsor anyways. I mean, it's because we're doing it for, unless the city doesn't want to do it, and then we'll take you off the sponsorship.
Thank you.
There you go.
Was there another speaker? Welcome. This is the topic before us.
Hello, my name is Amanda Ross. I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo, and I am working with Steve Fleury and Susan DeCarli on this event. The website is not up to date yet. At the end of that, it says thank you sponsors, and then lists the sponsors. It was last year's. I still haven't had a chance to update the site yet. I just want to let you know that SLOCOG is also behind this event. I just took a job as a rideshare program manager for SLOCOG, and I am here representing them as well to let you know that we are really trying to raise awareness for the connections between Atascadero and Paso Robles through Templeton, and that's kind of the goal of this event, to show that there is a lack of connection. And part of last year, we had a great board up that showed the connection and where it's lacking. Susan brought that from Paso, and it raised a lot of awareness. I had a lot of people coming up to me asking questions about it, asking where the plan was. We're really trying to just get the public's awareness of the fact that it's really hard to move between the cities. So I just wanted to make sure that that point was brought across. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none approach, I'll close public comment. I had a comment or two of my own, having been involved with most of the Bike Month events for the last 8 years or so. And again, anytime you're working on an event, this is kind of an early stage. We probably should say it's a draft. I try to do that now and then. But there are a number of sponsors coming forward. I know there's a number of $1,000 sponsors. I know both cities, Mayor Martin and I, have supported this for many years. We have a great team, Martin and O'Malley. He rides his bike, and I cook with Kiwanis. So that's our partnership. And we felt that rather than hosting Bike Month events, we've actually cut back on Bike Month events in our cities, which can be very staff intensive. And if you factored in the costs of that, We thought it might be a better use of resources. We could contribute a little bit. I thought that was a fine idea. It's up to the council to agree or not to support this. But the event will go on in any case. Paso Robles City has supported it with $500. I thought it'd be nice if Atascadero did as well. But we have a number of corporate sponsors that'll cover the costs of this event. It's really focused on youth. We've always tried to make sure that educational materials go to the classrooms, literally, and there's actual safety training. It's kind of a rallying point to get information out in the community, and then this is kind of like a celebration of an event where we converge on in Templeton. And so I've always thought that maybe Councilman Kelly and I could get a couple of stationary bikes on the back of a pickup, maybe, and participate.
Motorcycles,
yeah. Anyway, that was just the thought. It's a $500 request. And Councilman Kelly, did you have more questions?
I just have two questions for the city manager, I guess. Without any formal request for the money, how did this get to come on the agenda?
I think we just became aware of the event. Both Mayor O'Malley brought it to our attention, but Rideshare Stephanie Hicks, Susan DeCarli, who's been on the kind of the founding board, they've all reached out to the city saying, okay, we're doing this event, and would you be a sponsor?
Just one other question. If you could, maybe I didn't pick it up the first time. Would this money come out of some budgeted account that is set up for an event like this, or are we going to be robbing it from some other place?
No. So this will come out of you have some money set aside for various community outreach, and this would be appropriate to spend out of that budgeted funds.
Are those some of the funds that are listed under the city council that we
yes,
have in
Yes, correct.
Okay, I don't want to be a stick in the mud. I think I made my point upon the procedures, and I hope we can clear it up for next year. I think it's a good event for the kids and what have you to put on. But I hope we can just clean the process up, not only for this event and other events in the future. I think we have to be very, very careful how we spend the taxpayers' money and that we have justification on the books of why we're doing it, where it goes, and what the result is. I just don't think people can walk in here and say, I want $500, and somehow you write them a check. That's just not right. I think we, or at least I take a pretty strong responsibility on spending the taxpayers' money. So I will go along with it.
Thank you. And to clarify, of course, we do have funds budgeted for events. That's separate. There's categories. There's a process to go through on that. This is a bit of a hybrid, which is why I believe the city manager put it on for our consideration. Is it really comes out of the category of everything to deal with transportation and the activities we've taken on under our bicycle plan, which has to be updated, by the way, and our relationship with some other agencies. So that is, the city manager said, this $500 would not be coming out of the event budget, which has another process. This comes out of that category, having to do with these things that are listed on the display. Councilman Kelly, another comment.
Just one further comment. I think this is an example how we do come to these meetings with an open mind. I did make a flip-flop today after we heard what the presentation was, so I think the people do get a fair shake from us up here.
That's good, and that's why we never say we're not going to vote for or something against before public comment, because you have influence. Thank you. With that, we have to see actually how we vote, because we haven't had a motion yet on this item.
I'll make a motion that the council approve $500 for sponsorship of the 2016 North County Cycle de Mayo.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes, and if you could please make note of my concerns from the meeting.
Councilmember Tordeman?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And let me just check with our audience to see, is Lisa here? Welcome. I'm now going to go back to our proclamations as we've finished our consent calendar, and we'll kind of jump back to proclamations and going on to our updates from city managers. So if you would join us at the lectern, I have a proclamation to read. This is the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and thank you for being here to receive this. Whereas the Atascadero City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life, an opportunity for that child to learn that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas April, Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, marks a time to recognize that our community's children are precious assets, that the quality of their early years is our collective responsibility, and that we commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. And whereas Friday, April 8th, 2016, has been named a countywide Wear Blue Day to raise awareness about the many children in our midst who suffer daily from abuse and neglect, and to pledge support for strategies that strengthen families and protect our young ones. And whereas Saturday, April 9th, 2016, will commemorate Day of the Child at the 38th Annual Children's Day in the Plaza celebration in the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza, and a variety of other events honoring Month of the Child will provide an opportunity to acknowledge the dedication of individuals and organizations to improve the lives of children and youth and raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials. And whereas in this caring and connected city, we will, including and beyond the Month of the Child, continue to dedicate our efforts and our resources to investing in our community's future by investing in and supporting our community's children and youth. And whereas, may we remember to listen to and watch the children around us, to have patience, and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Atascadero is proclaiming April 2016 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. And thank you, Lisa, for being here. Please give us a little background on your organizations.
Happy to. And then I have some party favors.
Oh, party favors.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity to introduce myself and also come before the Atascadero City Council to accept this proclamation. My name is Lisa Fraser. I have been directing the Center for Family Strengthening, which is also known as the Child Abuse Prevention Council here in San Luis Obispo County. I've been doing that since 2001. I'm also here representing the Child Care Planning Council, which is the body of individuals and stakeholders that convene around the sector of how we support all of our child care providing services, whether it's through a preschool or whether it's through a Head Start program or whether it's a family daycare setting. We are recognizing and honoring those individuals who dedicate their lives to the profession of child care and also to educate everybody the importance of a quality child care setting. Today, I'm here to also give you some party favors because we're promoting our annual Children's Day in the Plaza, at the Mission Plaza, which has been going on for a very long time. I know Atascadero has their own event in May, and so I will hand these out to encourage you to help us promote not only the event, but also to, as you go to your day-to-day work, whether you're in your work at your day job or in your work here at the City Council, to think about the policies that you pass that impact families. And I was listening earlier to the wonderful activities that are coming our way here, and we should be very proud that we have activities that strengthen families that are positive and healthy, but also families that need to go to work every day, that need quality child care. How do you support that in your work, in your whoever you employ? How is that being done as a policy in your work setting? So to think about that. And And also, it is Child Abuse Prevention Month. It's been George Bush declared that in 1990, and we continue to promote the awareness of this issue. We are doing quite well at strengthening families in our community, but we always need to bring this to the forefront, and I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you about Children's Day in La Plaza. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and it's also Month of the Child. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, join us up front for one photo op. Okay, thank you. Well, that is our presentation for the evening. We already had gone through the consent calendar, so we're back on track to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. Hold on one second. Let me get organized here. So the first item I have for you tonight is the Atascadero Main Street's Art and Wine Tour. Just a final reminder, it will be held this coming Friday, March 25th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. And we invite everyone to come downtown to enjoy an evening stroll while visiting the different merchants, artists, and other downtown shops while sipping on various local wines. We'll also be offering complimentary tours of a historic city hall that night. And there will be a church service in the Sunken Gardens that evening, too. So it will be an interesting night there in Atascadero. It's going to be a beautiful night, and it's always enjoyable. Chick City. At the Charles Paddock Zoo, the very popular Chick City has returned with some great press and fanfare to the zoo. But the chicks and a few of their fuzzy and scaly friends will only be there until April 3rd. These cute little baby chicks and bunnies are always a great springtime attraction at the zoo, and we encourage everyone to get down there this week to see them along with all of our other full-time zoo residents. This is always a very popular event. The kids love looking at the chicks and the bunnies and hooing and awing over them. Walmart update. So it is official. Staff and Walmart representatives met earlier today for an intake meeting. Walmart has officially submitted their plans for on-site grading, drainage improvements, the parking lot, and pad development, along with a separate set of plans for off-site road improvement, including the El Camino Real and Del Rio Road roundabout, along with all of their plan check fees. So this is basically them starting to submit for a permit. We've been working together quite a bit over the last 2 years since the lawsuit was settled, doing all of the pre-work that goes in before you can actually get to there, and they've submitted quite a package today. So we're excited to be working with them. We're excited that it's official.
Did they turn in a check with the permit?
They did.
Okay. It's real.
That's important. I just wanted to share a little bit about Dial-A-Ride Driver's Kindness. I had shared this with the council, but I think this is just one example of what your public servants do every day. Yolanda actually works for our contractor and is not a city employee, but is very typical for what you'll find for a city employees. So she's made a personal purchase of a backpack for a child who is in need. It's my understanding that this child is the youngest of 12, and as Yolanda is the youngest child also, knows that you often get hand-me-downs, and it's hard to get anything new when you are the youngest. And she really wanted to make sure this child had something of her own that was brand new, and so Yolanda bought her a backpack. And I just wanted to recognize Yolanda for doing that. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the printery. There's been a lot of questions and inquiries here at the city regarding the printery. So if you'll bear with me, I just want to share a little bit of information about the printery. It was built in 1912 and housed the printing presses for E.G. Lewis and his publishing company there. Printed such things such as the Illustrated Review along with other newspapers and items there. It is on the National Registry of Historic Places. It is owned by the Printery LLC, but there are liens on both parcels. There's actually two parcels that the printery, what we would consider the printery, sits on. There's a $3.1 million in lien on one parcel and $1.5 million on the other parcel. The building was heavily damaged in the 2003 earthquake. And at that time, in 2003, it was actually owned by the city of Atascadero and the Mason. And so as part of that, we got an estimate for what it would take to repair it. And while we were there, we said, and what other things do we need to do to bring it up to what the building should be? At that point in 2004, it was about a $9.6 million price tag to fix the printery and take care of some of the deferred maintenance items there. The printery, after the earthquake and after negotiations with FEMA, the printery was given 100% to the Masons. The Masons subsequently sold it to Printery LLC. Printery LLC subsequently went into bankruptcy court and was part of that and has been sitting there for quite some time. So they have not paid any county taxes on the building since 2007. They've been in default since 2008. Because of that, the tax assessor will hold an auction for back taxes on May 14, 2016, so in this coming May. The minimum bid at that auction is $244,300. Anyone can bid to purchase the building, whether you be a nonprofit, a public agency, or a private developer. The bids go up in $100 increments, but the minimum is $244,300. Whoever purchases the building out of the auction will receive the property free of all the liens, but not of any deed restrictions that are on the property. Those stay with the property no matter who purchases it, but the liens do go away. Any taxing entity, any of those entities that are owed the back taxes, may object to the sale. So what you can file a formal notice with the county saying that you object to the sale, but that objection must be presented with a bona fide application to purchase the property. So the city is a taxing agency, along with the school district, the cemetery district, Cuesta College, the county, any number of taxing agencies, we're one of them. But if we object to the auction, we have to say that we are willing to purchase it, and for at least the minimum amount. We then go into negotiations with the county. There's a lot of other stuff that happens, and a year from now we could purchase the building. The city does not have any intent to purchase the building, therefore we cannot object to the sale because we don't have that bona fide intent. Oops, I lost part of my thing. The building is, as I said, on the National Historic Registry, and there are some deed restrictions. So first of all, there are just some things that happen with any National Historic Registry building. You're going to have to do basically a historical analysis of the building for any work that needs to be done. You're going to basically, the historic consultant similar to this building, will go around and say, okay, this area here is red. That means all the historic fabric is good. You have to preserve it in place. You have to go the extra mile in this area. Some of it's yellow, where, okay, there's some historic fabric left, but over the years, a lot of it has been lost, so you need to use caution in these areas. And then there's some areas that are just green. There's a small karate studio at the very back that was added sometime in the 80s or 90s that has no historic fabric left. You can do whatever you want to it. No matter who purchased the building, whether it's a nonprofit, a private developer, they have to adhere to those. Anything in the red or yellow zone that is part of the historic fabric, they have to restore in accordance with the Secretary of Interior's historic renovation or rehabilitation guidelines. Again, very similar to these buildings. So anything that happens there has to happen in accordance with that, no matter what. In addition, the city has some extra deed restrictions that we placed on the building while it was in our ownership, and those include preserving the historic fabric, making sure that it is open to the public at some point, but no less than annually each year. They would have to maintain it and keep it up and absolutely preserve the building. And so those, I'm just trying to address some of the common questions that we had and that we've been getting over the last couple of weeks. And with that, I'd happy to answer any questions council has.
Thank you. Questions from council. Councilwoman Fonzie, followed by Councilwoman Moreno.
Rochelle, I'd like to go back to the Walmart issue. Do we have a timeline from that to give us an idea when they'll break ground?
I don't have an exact timeline, but they are trying to work towards getting their final map complete by the end of June. We think they're on a great path towards that. My estimate is, seeing as they're doing this, that they will break ground soon after that. So I would expect late summer of this year we'd start to see them break ground. Phil, did they give you any additional indication today?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilwoman Moreno.
Rochelle, regarding the Prinery, is that the $4.6 million, the $3.5 and the, or let's see, $3.5 and what were those numbers again? They're not in front of me.
$3.1 and $1.5.
Okay, so $4.6 total. So if a nonprofit or an investor, someone purchased through the tax sale, does that $4.6 go away or is that $4.6 still there?
That is my understanding that $4.6 goes away. Particularly if they buy it through the auction process. Mm-hmm. If you buy it through the objection process, there's some additional processes you have to go through before that goes away.
Yeah. The bigger issue to the purchaser is the, well, $10 million and up of...
They're both big issues, yes.
Yeah.
Councilman Kelly.
Yes, the $9.6 million estimate from 2004, was that the estimate from, was it Ennis Langdon?
That is correct.
I think at the same time they also did one on this building. How did the final cost of redoing this building compare to the estimate that they had? Was it pretty close or was there a lot of overruns? I'm trying to determine in today's market and how the restoration actually went of if this is a valid number, because I can see you could add 25% onto it right now just for 12 years.
Yeah. I have to admit that I don't remember. I apologize.
Oh, no, that's okay. I couldn't remember either. Thank you.
Other council questions? That concludes your city manager report. I believe that's a question. I wasn't saying it's over. I was just wondering, is it done?
That is it. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on anything that's not on the agenda, and we limit that to 3 minutes per person, and we do not respond to questions raised during public comment because they're not agendized items. We're under a lot of rules where we have to have a publication of things that we're going to talk about. So we will take in your input. If we can respond, we'll have our city manager do so, but you're welcome to come forward. Welcome, Mrs. Lutz.
Thank
Thank you very much, my dear neighbor, O'Malley. My name is Marlene Lutz, and I'm the coordinator of the ladies' conference that we have annually here in Atascadero. I know many of you are very familiar with that, but some of you may not be. And so let me explain that we're a nonprofit organization. Our goal is to bring a quality program here to Atascadero of people whom our ladies may not get to hear if they didn't come right here. And so we seek to bring encouragement, provide a wonderful ambiance for our ladies to come into, good music. We this year brought a wonderful band of women, five women musicians from Portland, Oregon. And other than our program people, we try very hard to use local businesses in any way that we can. We use our local hotel for people that come from out of town. And we do draw women from the coastal cities for this. We've gotten a nice reputation over the years, I'm happy to say. And we usually draw between 400 and 500 women right here in Atascadero. And I think that's fun. It's something that's appreciated. And I heard so many rave reviews as a result of this year's conference. As I said, it's a nonprofit organization, and we use many volunteers from the local community. One thing I'm so happy that we can utilize is our young people, and we train them to be very professional in their serving, and they dress very formally in black and white and do a very nice job of serving the ladies. We turn a gymnasium, the Colony Park Community Center, into this lovely ambiance, at least as good as we can. We put up a large banner of a mountainous setting, decorate round tables with lovely linens and nice table decorations. And let's see, the other kind of volunteers that we utilize is men and women where they can, to help walk the ladies back to their cars at night in the dark. And our ladies just really feel very special about that. And our own Mayor O'Malley organizes that for us, not as the mayor, but as a friendly, helpful citizen of the community. This year we were very honored to have Heather Moreno as our MC. She does a lovely job, and don't tell me I have to quit there.
You can wind up.
Okay, I'll wind up then. Let's see here. I think I've covered most everything, but the main thing is to thank you as a community for providing the wonderful facility and being so gracious to us. And in turn, we want to bring business into the town and serve the ladies of our community. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council, City Staff. My name is Matt Miranda, representing Atascadero Firefighters Association this evening, and coming to you to announce our upcoming 5th Annual Firehouse 5K, another wonderful event, and we hope you guys join us. We'll have live music out there, bounce houses for all the kids, and maybe big kids, who knows. We'll have our 5K run, which you know goes all the way to the top of Pine Mountain and weaves itself through Stadium Park. We'll have a kids' half-mile fun run, and then we'll top it all off with tri-tip sandwiches cooked right there at our fire station. So yummy little treat for you. Even if you're not running, just come on out and enjoy all the festivities. If you want to be involved, if you want to learn more about being involved, you can go to our website, taskgirlfirefighters.org, or send me personally an email at firehousefunrun. Hey, there's a banner. firehousefunrun@gmail.com. And that's all I got. Thank you very much. Hope to see you then.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, council staff. My name is Nicholas Mattson. I'm a longtime resident of Atascadero. Born in San Luis, raised in Santa Clara Road, and I've been here for 37 years. This town means a lot to me, and I apologize. Better get going here. I'd like to read a statement from a group I'm representing, the Atascadero Printery Foundation. It's an outstanding group of Atascadero locals, and I'd like you to raise your hand if you're part of that group here. Fantastic. Great group of people to work with, and we have something to say right now. The printery building, and thank you for your presentation. The printery building has been a landmark of the Atascadero colony for over 100 years. It served the community as a mainstay in the colony, early colony years, bringing commerce to the new community. Over time, it served well for education, public safety, and finally a community center. It is loved by many for its rich history, many enjoyable memories, and the amazing piece of architecture that it is. The damage in 2003, in the 2003 earthquake was major, but the repair is not insurmountable. Estimated at $9.6 million, I hear. The building will be able to be restored to be a beautiful, welcoming site. The Atascadero Printery Foundation formed to do this restoration and maintain the building far into the future. It is our goal that the building be full of activity for the entire community, including multiple nonprofit organizations, many of which are represented within our group. Many other organizations will work together to bring this nighttime activity to the downtown Atascadero. The printery building stands in peril of being sold at the Slo County Tax Collector's Auction on May 14th. The Atascadero Printing Foundation is the only entity ready and willing to purchase and restore the building with donations and grants, making the project financially sound. We seek your help in it to purchase and restore the building to the structure that the city and community deserve. We are imploring you to protest the tax sale and the purchase and to purchase the building. This will preserve not only the building, but will also pay the city back for the funds put forth in shoring and securing the building after the earthquake. This amount was substantial, and we are sure the citizens of Atascadero would appreciate the return of these funds. If the property is sold at auction, this amount will be wiped away with the other liens. We understand the city can protest to preserve the lien. In doing so, the agreement to purchase must then be submitted. We are asking the city to do so. We know that there are no city funds available. We will form a contract with the city to provide the funds to purchase the building. That contract will state the foundation will purchase the building from the city for a nominal amount or the amount of the city liens immediately upon the city gaining possession from the Chapter 8 tax sale. You as council are at a crossroads to make a historic impact on Atascadero. The printery will become a beautiful functional part of the Atascadero City Civic Center or stay a blight. We ask for your support at no cost to the city. Please help us save the historic icon for its generations to come. Sincerely, the Atascadero Printery Foundation. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you. I have 27
more seconds or that's going back up.
Well,
thank you guys. I appreciate your time.
You can always come back. Welcome. Next speaker.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Greg Rivette. I live on Rosario Avenue in a restored colony home. I just wanted to say that this is one of the first buildings that I see every morning, and it's been a concern for me for over a decade. Just by the way, I would like to request, and maybe it has to be formalized, that this be agendized for a city council meeting, because I don't think the public is really aware of what's going on. I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I think a city council hearing, just for, maybe it's just for information, maybe for discussion, allows the public to be notified of what's impending. First of all, I wanted to ask or thank Phil Dunsmore for helping our group and providing information. He's very helpful and involved in the restoration and historic context of the city. Mr. O'Malley for helping. We had a discussion earlier in the week with the county and Rochelle. Also, we talked to the county and just information finding. I think that I will discuss in a minute why I think this would be better for it to not go to a tax auction. But if it does, maybe there is a possibility of this ultimately ending up in a nonprofit's hand as opposed to a developer. First of all, I just wanted to say that it's a National Historic Landmark building. There's only a dozen in the state of this significance, and it really takes a special owner, and I don't think that the owner would be a developer. I spoke out against the property being transferred to the developer 10 years ago. I won't mention his name. We all know who he is. My fear was that he was not capable of developing a project of this significance and complexity. It turned out it was even worse. So we all live with that. I think that if it is somehow, unfortunately, continues to a tax lien sale, that it's very likely it will be purchased by somebody who is, and I just kind of wrote down the several options. One option is nobody bids on it and we get 12 months and it goes up for sale again. Another option is we have a successful bidder, but they don't have the funding to do the project. My estimate, I'm an architect and I've restored National Historic Landmarks in the past of similar size. And I think this project is about $6 million if it's not prevailing wage. So 9 to 12 would be high, but if the city owned it, it might be 9 to 12. So a nonprofit would have the option of fundraising I've got 10 seconds left, so I'm going to finish. Anyway, I think it would be best for it to go to a nonprofit. I'm not sure how we would do it. I'd like to work with our group and the city and hopefully find a resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Charles Dunlap. I'm a longtime resident of Atascadero, and I'm the vice chair of the Atascadero Printery Foundation. I wish to speak to the matter of the Atascadero Printery Building. As you all know, the building was completed in 1916 and has been a key element in the history of Atascadero since its completion. In addition to its rich history as a printery for the publications created by E.G. Lewis, this building has been home to many organizations within the community. Its current state has deteriorated since the 2003 earthquake, as we all know, and that damage that it sustained is causing further damage because of the environment. That fact, coupled with the impending tax sale, places its future as a piece of Atascadero history at great peril. The loss of this building as a community resource would be a tragedy. I am here tonight seeking the help of the City Council in any way, shape, or form to help us save this piece of Atascadero history and use it for the benefit of the citizens of this fine city. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Mr. Mayor and the members of City Council, I want to thank you for hearing us tonight. My name is Catherine Hillman, and I am the Vice President of the Homeowners Association for Creekside Condos, which we call them condos, but they're really separate homes that back up against the printery building. So if the police are contacted because somebody's breaking into the building, it's quite often me calling and or my neighbors, and we try and shoo the people out when we see them in there and try and keep an eye on things. And I just want to say that in spite of, you know, looking at the building falling apart and in spite of having to chase people off the lot, we truly, truly love and appreciate this building. And at our last Homeowners Association meeting, I took an informal poll. There were about half of the homeowners at the meeting, and 100% of them said that they would love to see this building come back to the community, be restored, be used for community functions, and they were all excited to hear that there was going to be some movement. All of them wanted to see it come back to the community. So I do urge you, please work with the foundation, and we really appreciate your time in hearing us. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, welcome.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for your time. Sorry. My name is Jennifer Tittle Kim, and I'm also with the Atascadero Printery Foundation. Okay, and so I have been a resident of Atascadero for 8 years. And I drove past there. I live on Traffic Way, and I drive past there almost every day, and I always wondered what that building was. And then I saw Karen at the Tent City, and she had a little table, you know, help me save the printery. I'm like, I'll help you. So I wrote down my name and number, and that's how Karen and I have become acquainted, and I've known Barbie for many years as well. I'm here to also ask that the Prinery be a building that's going to be for the community as well. There's plenty of schools that are near it, and I think it could really benefit the children and also the adults. So I'm also requesting to call a special meeting for the Atascadero Prinery Foundation, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
I imagine that boils down to money, and I have a solution for that too. My name is Jeremy Main. I came here a while back and wanted to continue my story. So, your favorite son plays for the high school football team and breaks a vertebrae in the middle of a game. You take him down to the doctor across the street and the pharmacist, and you get some Dilaudid for him for severe pain. That's diacetylhydromorphone. Let's call it what it really is, heroin. That's one thing. Let's say you're too lazy to exercise your children. You feed them a bunch of junk food. You don't engage them intellectually. They can't sit still in school. You take them over to the doctor across the street and the pharmacist, and you get some desoxin. That's methamphetamine hydrochloride salt crystals, crystal meth, in the form of desoxin for a six-year-old. Desoxin, methamphetamine, crystal meth for a six-year-old, heroin, diacetylhydromorphone, diacetylmorphine, for your 17-year-old, but you won't allow marijuana to be prescribed and given to a cancer patient. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Roy Freer. I'm currently a member of the Atascadero Masonic Lodge. We have a past history with the Prinery Foundation, or excuse me, the Prinery, as far as being housed our Masonic way. And at any rate, I'm here to support the Prinery Foundation, and I would really ask you as the council members to also try to do what you can to support the Prinery. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
I'm Barbara Bates. I'm happy to be here. Mr. Mayor, can you hear me?
A little plenty.
I can't hear you.
Yeah. We hear you very well.
That's good, because I have to be able to hear myself. Allergies, and I see your mouth moving. I don't know what you're saying.
A lot of people say that to us. Go ahead. You're fine.
Mr. Mayor and City Council, I'm here backing up what everybody has said prior to me. And it seems like we've been here before. From the time I started coming to the mic with the pavilion, with the youth center, we have had projects like this before, and we always seem to get them done. We're standing in this building right now. So I am a director with the Prinery Foundation, and I've been in that building with different issues. Operation School Bell was in there for a while. The Recreation Center was there for a while. So it's a beautiful building, and it would be a travesty if we don't at least try to get a hold of it and do something with it. So thank you for your time. I don't know what I said because I couldn't hear myself.
Thank you. And if I could ask Nick, we do try to have everyone that has not gotten to speak for the first time to cycle through, and we'll exhaust all of the first time. And then we will be happy to listen for a second time through. Welcome, sir.
Mayor, City Council, staff members, my name is Jeff Pettigo, and I'm also with the Atascadero Prinery Foundation. I am one of the more recent Atascadero residents, having lived here for just over 2 years. I just wanted to say a couple of things about it. One, we believe that having the Prinery building available for the community is the right way to go. As a commercial entity, First of all, one of our big concerns there is if it goes to tax auction and is purchased by a developer, if you run the numbers and look at the cost of the renovation, you look at current rents in Atascadero, the numbers just don't make sense. So we are very concerned that if a developer does purchase it, then they will continue to not develop it, sit on the property, and see it deteriorate even further. We also believe that having it available for the community will spur more activity in the downtown area, and it's an area that, as new residents of Atascadero, you know, we've grown to love and would love to see flourish more so than it is today. And the last thing I want to say is that we have an amazing team on the Pernuri Foundation. We have lots of different skills available there. I have no doubt that we will be able to manage this project, raise the funds, and see this move forward from here. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Welcome.
My name's Tyler Penley. Sorry. I just had some questions on the Pernuri. It is a national or a historic landmark, just like City Hall, right? So my question is, doesn't it qualify for the bond money in the 2010 FEMA that restored this building that's going to pay for the new footbridge? So couldn't the city actually buy it with that money? And also, I just want to say, it is really important to me. Part of my childhood, like, was crushed when that earthquake happened. They condemned the building, and I couldn't skate at that skate park anymore. And when I was really young, I did karate inside that building, too. But that area is really important. I don't understand how any realtor office or any type of store could be more important than the bridge between the community center and the skate park and the schools. I think it's in the community's best interest to, I mean, there's a foundation for it. There wasn't a foundation for a footbridge. It blows me away. Okay, that's it.
Thank you. Any other speakers for the first time on anything not on the agenda? We're happy to entertain a second round. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. My name is Nicholas Mattson, longtime resident of Atascadero, and thank all of you who spoke in between mine, especially Tyler. Thank you for saying what you said about that. Here I go again. I do it every time. I've never been in the building. I just have a love for Atascadero and the history that this city has. I'm actually going to get vulnerable right now. I don't have anything else. All I have is the city. If you know my family history, that might make sense to you. So I would love to see this group, fantastic group, and you know these people. This is a group that you know and you live with, and it's not a shot in the dark. These are community members who are willing to stand up and take responsibility for their community. I'm proud to stand with them, and I hope that that you guys will stand up with us as well. This is an opportunity to show the community and the citizens, residents of Atascadero, that you are willing to take a chance on them. And that's who I represent here today and who I'm standing with. I'm very excited. I know that we're going to accomplish what we set out to accomplish. I don't know how it's all going to happen, but I know there will be a ribbon cutting on that building. And I'll be proud to stand on the side that said, I'm all in right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Seeing none approach, we'll close the public community forum portion and bring it back to the council. And again, it's not something that we can respond to. However, if you do have a particular question, there were some good questions that actually have answers. If you would direct those in writing to our city manager, she could respond on anything that's factual and the history and the financing. She has quite a bit of experience on historic restoration projects, and I know I'd be happy to do that. I'm going to turn it back to the city manager, as we usually do. Is there anything you've heard that either city attorney or city manager could respond to?
I think I could possibly respond, if the city attorney will give me some leeway here, to could the 2010 bond money be used for the building? And unfortunately, the answer is no to that. The 2010 bond money was programmed for restoration of this building first, along with FEMA money. The bond money really is separate from the FEMA money, but the with any remaining funds to go to a list of six different projects that the redevelopment agency prioritized at that time. When the state took over redevelopment and took that, they said that if the successor agency jumps through a bunch of hoops, they could still use that bond money on to finish the original purpose for which it was intended. So that leaves us to those six projects, and the printer is not on that.
Yeah, so basically the bond money has nothing to do with historic restoration. It wasn't tied to this building or the printery. It was basically the sales tax, property tax increment that was programmed as part of redevelopment?
Correct. So, but the redevelopment agency did program part of, for this building also, so just to clarify. So it wasn't historic. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, so it had to be approved by the state back then.
And the redevelopment agency, correct.
And nothing back can be then. Added you since the governor canceled it.
Correct.
Any other responses? I think that is it. Well, thank you all for coming out on that item. We'll continue on. Oh, did you have a question?
Can we consider a consensus on agendizing this? Is there any?
I think you can always consider adding something on an agenda if.
I mean, I think there's clearly a lot of interest in the community, a lot of hardworking people that that want to save this building, and I think everybody here would like that. And really, what's feasible and the working of what's been offered, I don't know, when we can't discuss that tonight. But I think it would be worthwhile to have that discussion, and I don't know if I have consensus on that. But.
Well, let's check in with the city attorney, because we could do one of two things. We could schedule a special study session that might not have to be on the two-week, four-week cycle of city council meetings, or we could have a committee designated to meet with the organization on an ongoing, or we could just go ahead and request that it be placed on a future agenda. Are all three of those options?
Yes.
Any other options you could think of that we might want to consider if we're going to be considering such options?
Well, the only other option would be not to schedule a meeting.
Okay, there's always that. Okay, so with that, so I think Councilman Moreno has brought up that we might want to have some future discussion, and I understand there's at least three different ways you could approach that. We also, because it's not an agendized item, we cannot have a lot of discussion on it even to set a meeting. So we have to either make a consensus recommendation very soon, or we have to move on. So, Councilman Kelly, we need to be brief.
Oh, I could clarify on that one.
Go ahead.
Point.
Thank you.
You can certainly have a discussion at this point on whether you want to
have
to a future agenda, either at a regular council meeting, a special meeting of whatever format you wanted to schedule it for, or you could have an ad hoc committee look at this.
But not discuss why you would want to do that or the merits of doing that or anything that might be.
Exactly.
Thank you. With that in mind, Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I think there's a date deadline that if this were agendized, that something needs to happen before that date.
Well, there is a process. Let me pull it up here. Yeah, there is a date of March 31st. There's a couple of ways if the city were interested in pursuing the printery property. The city could bid at the tax sale auction if the city is the highest bidder. And that, I believe, would happen in May. The deadline of March 31st would be for the city to object to the default sale, in which case the city would then, which is the deadline is March 31, in which case the city would then enter into negotiations with the county. The minimum purchase price would be the outstanding tax debt, which I understand is $244,000. And then the city would still take the property subject to any existing restrictions, but would not be subject to the liens.
But we can't discuss that. What we can discuss tonight is, do we want to hold a special meeting or a regular meeting to have that discussion? And it's pointed out that if that doesn't happen before a particular deadline, it wouldn't have much impact.
That was why I gave the description I did.
Thank you. Anything else, Councilman Kelly?
No, I just wanted to bring that time frame up. It's a nine-day period.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to bring that time frame up. It appears to be a nine-day period.
Any other council members have some input?
I know we don't have the money to buy it. I know we're not discussing that now, but I love that building. I'd like to see it restored. I hate the deadline. I wish it wasn't so soon. But I don't want to give false hope that we have the money in pocket to make that bid. That investment is a lot of money for this city to put forward when we're arguing about $500 for a bike fest. I'm not opposed to having a meeting to discuss it. I'm open to that, and I think probably an ad hoc committee might be the best way to go at it.
Yes.
To get those facts out in a less formal setting, and that would be my preference.
Thank you. And Councilwoman Moreno, further brief comment.
Yeah, and I agree about the affordability. There was just an idea put forth, and I would like to know the merits of that and how realistic that is, and I know we don't want to discuss it, but it looked like there was possibly a way that it could be done where the city is reimbursed. So without going any further, if that's one way to look at it and some potential, I think it's worth looking into.
Realistically, you could not, I'm going to guess, you could not schedule a meeting fast enough to be able to then actually have a budget discussion to redo the budget in order to free up money to even make the bid. So there's some time constraints just on our legal restraints. Is that, I see the city manager nodding her head.
There are certainly constraints. I think the practicality of having a budget reorganization and significant staff report in time for you to make a decision, let alone trying to get all of your schedules together at the same time, would be quite a challenge.
Thank you. We're on to Councilman Sturdivant, and if you have another question, queue up there. Thank you.
Well, I would say that an ad hoc actually makes most sense at this point in time, just because of the time frame, get the information where we can share with one another. It's less and less formal. I think that'd be the better way to go at this point in time.
Thank you. Councilwoman Moreno.
Is there any realistic way of requesting an extension on that deadline?
I think there we could always request it. Whether the county would be willing to grant it would be completely up to them.
Okay. And is that a simple process? I mean, or does it require a bunch of staff time to do some formal thing, or can it be a fairly... Sometimes it just seems like in government, especially once you get the county involved, nothing can be simple. I don't know why. But.
Let me intervene and help, because, again, we can't really give direction. I think maybe by consensus, the city manager would understand that we'd always like to keep our options open, and within your existing authority, that might be something you could pursue. Is that a distinct possibility?
That is a possibility.
Okay. And then there would be we would always encourage you to maximize our options. So if you could do anything in that area, I think council would appreciate that. I would suggest we consider maybe even in a broader sense, another ad hoc committee dealing with historic issues. But before I start down that path, Councilman Kelly has...
I was going to start that.
Okay.
I think in the past I have put in a lot of time years and years ago, and just within the last year or so, I've talked to a couple developers that were interested in this. I have gathered a whole bunch of different numbers over the years of how this can work, how it doesn't work, what it takes to make it work. And I do have quite an experience in development and building and what have you. So if possible, I would like to be on that ad hoc committee. I think I could be a valuable member to it.
Well, I think I won't be making appointments this evening, but if there's interest in that, there seems to be some consensus. Let me come back with that in mind, and of course, I think we have a number of folks that would be well qualified for that. We can only have two members, but it would be good to look at liaisoning with this organization, Historical Society, and others. So let's take that under advisement, and the city manager can keep you and us informed if we have any possibility of extension. And any other comments, Councilman Kelly?
Since we really don't know where this is going, and since it might get agendized and it may not, would that prevent us from talking to some of these people between now and then? Are we getting in some slippery water if we want to get together with a couple people and discuss this?
I'm not sure who you plan on talking to or what group of people. No, you could certainly speak with foundation members.
And they're very amenable to meeting, because the minute after they had their meeting a week ago Sunday, Kent Kinney was in my living room. And shortly thereafter, I was having a conversation with Mr. Ravette. So I know they're quite open to meeting with council members. So is there council consensus for looking at an ad hoc committee? And we may just want to go ahead with that. With that in mind, I'm going to suggest that Councilman Fonzie and Mice, you cannot do that. And then I would consider perhaps Councilman Kelly and myself functioning in that role as liaisons on this. I've personally restored a couple of historic buildings myself and certainly been involved in this project, and know the pain of that and the joy. So why don't we have I know you have a regular meeting. Why don't we follow up? Councilman Kelly and I bring a range of experience on this, and we are also old-timers in the community. So let's go ahead with that as an action I can take, I believe, to appoint an ad hoc committee of Councilman Kelly and myself. Let's just limit it specifically to the printery issue, and we'll be time limited. Is that appropriate?
Yes, you have the authority to appoint an ad hoc committee at any time.
Thank you. Then that's what I will do, and the city manager is going to pursue maximizing our options. So I think that might be what we can do this evening. And so let us know about how we could check in with you guys. Maybe it would be wise to have us join in a meeting, and then we can just have some discussion. Start there. We can share what we know a little more, because if two of us are there, we can talk a little more freer than we can as a council. Believe it or not, that's the way the rules are. Okay, with that, we'll move on then to the next agenda item. Thank you, Councilman Moreno, for getting us considering some options in a way that we could pull it off within our legal constraints. And it's been requested we have a brief break, so we'll do that and then come back for the rest of the agenda. So let's have at it. That concludes just the community forum portion of our agenda. We'll now start on the actual agendized items we're supposed to be working on tonight. First is B1, a medical marijuana cultivation amendment. And
thank
Mr.
you, Mayor
Dunsmore, Council. Go ahead.
Here I am. Tonight we're going to be revisiting the medical marijuana issue. This was brought to the council in January, and that's where we discussed potentially coming back. Now, just a reminder, on January 26, we did adopt Ordinance number 593 that did move the discussion in our municipal code for marijuana to the zoning chapter 9. And we did instill at that time a full ban on cultivation, dispensaries, and commercial facilities and deliveries. And that was all done in haste, really in response to the state assembly bills that came forward with that March 1st deadline. Now, as we know, that March 1st deadline is gone, but we, you know, put our codes in place as a placeholder moving forward. So with that second reading, Council did ask for us to come back with ordinance amendments that do allow a limited level of cultivation by qualified patients and caregivers. We brought to you a number of different paths that could go. We did select a specific path on that, and just to go over that direction that came from City Council on February 9th, that direction was to look at something that allowed no more than 6 mature or 12 immature marijuana plants. We talked about not allowing cultivation on vacant property. We talked about a max capacity of plants per property so that we didn't have an issue where there was multiple caregivers, multiple patients, and, you know, a large grow operation on a property. So we talked about no more than 9 mature or 15 immature marijuana plants. We talked about making sure things were put away, screened. So we talked about it in the fact that nothing in the front yard or similar restrictions along those lines. And we also talked about infringing onto other properties. We don't want to see this from an adjacent property or the street or not infringing into a neighbor's yard. And it was also brought up by council that, consistent with the state code, can we have a cap on the amount of possession? Now, that is one item that, in discussion with our legal team, that we did not bring to you tonight for discussion, because that is not a zoning or land use issue. That is a law enforcement or a different code issue. That's not how someone would use a property. So getting into it, the details, we did work with legal staff to refine that direction into an ordinance amendment to allow limited cultivation, consistent with that intent and consistent with the state law, knowing that what we could put in place is still something that we could change in the near future. It's a sort of a stopgap as things continue to evolve, as state and federal legislation continues to evolve, and it's sort of a wait and see until November to see what happens. So the summary of the new code in response to that direction that we received is that we developed a code that says a qualified patient can cultivate no more than 6 mature or 12 immature marijuana plants, that the qualified patient resides in that dwelling unit on the property where they do that cultivation, that they don't utilize a vacant lot or vacant property for cultivation. Again, no more than 9 mature or 15 immature marijuana plants that can be cultivated on the property by any combination of qualified patients. Again, that was to stop a situation to have, you know, a bunch of folks getting together on a property and having 500 plants, for example. And then we put in a provision that the qualified patient cultivates their marijuana plants either indoors or in a manner that's completely screened from view from the public right-of-way or any other property. And the last provision, that patient doesn't sell, distribute, donate, or provide that marijuana that they cultivate to any other person. The intent is, if they are indeed a patient, if they are indeed qualified to do that, that's for them, that's for their use, and that is it. As I mentioned before, as I alluded to, This is considered an interim ordinance until additional state legislation may be in place following November. This can and may be revisited should the council wish. So this doesn't, putting this in place now doesn't prevent us from changing anything later. And this does maintain the city's discretion to prohibit cultivation or any other forms of marijuana facilities in the future, whether commercial or personal, recreational, or medical. So recommendation, which comes from the Planning Commission, they did look at this. They did recommend the council adopt these amendments consistent with our original draft and consistent with what you have in your report tonight. If we were to act on this first read tonight, this ordinance could take effect as soon as May 12th, assuming an April 12th second reading of the ordinance. Now, I do have all of the ordinance language, should we want to get into that text. Here's the whole part of the proposed text I'll put on the screen. And what I'm going to scroll to in the underlined section is the addition that's being proposed here in its entirety. It goes kind of spanning over a couple of pages. But if you wanted to start talking about that, I'm going to leave that up on the screen. But for now, that concludes my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Council questions? Seeing none, I will open it up to the public. Anyone wishing to speak on this item? And before I close public comment, we do require ex parte on this item, which means we tell you of any input we've received outside this public process that may have influenced our decision. And I, for one, haven't had any discussion on this since our last meeting, and none from Councilman Sturdivant or Councilman Fonzie.
None.
Okay, and we still open to public input on this item. Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council for discussion or motion.
Make a motion that council introduce for first reading by title only, draft ordinance A, amending section 96.186 of the Itasca Nuevo Municipal Code regarding marijuana cultivation facilities.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Item C1, preliminary El Camino Real corridor study. Mr. Dunsmore again.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. We're going to talk to you about sort of a little bit of what I'll call long-range planning tonight, a little bit of a look at, you know, where our city has gone in the past and where it could go in the future. And this was prompted by just the recent development activity that's occurring in certain parts of the city and kind of has triggered us to, let's take a look at the bigger picture. Let's take a step back and see what's really going on, and let's take a look at vacancies and potential opportunities. And really the idea is, can we get a better understanding about future proposals that we're getting today, not only from residential development, but from commercial development? We have a good general plan in place right now. And so every time that general plan is amended to accommodate development, we need to really understand the full breadth of what that does. How does that impact our economic development? How does that impact our development opportunities? So what we did is we tried to get a common understanding, and really what we're doing tonight is taking a look at a corridor. We're not taking a look at the entire city. This is limited to El Camino Real, and a reason for that is the main economic driver of the city. It's what everyone sees. It's the area where most of our commercial and retail and service-related and business park development is. So what we're trying to answer tonight is where the vacancies are prevalent, how can the city assist, and how can we stay consistent with the general plan and respond to council goals that have been adopted in the past. Now, specifically, we've seen a few businesses coming into town recently. There's been some good, upbeat development things happening. Of course, you got the news today that the Walmart plans are in. Things are moving forward. At the same time, because of somewhat limited amount of multifamily land, we're seeing requests to convert vacant and underutilized commercial land to residential. specifically at the Dove Creek commercial property. There's properties behind the Style House Furniture at Solano Road, and there's property near the Kailana restaurant on North El Camino Real that we have actually received somewhat formal requests to say, hey, can I do a residential development project here? Can I do multifamily apartments here? Can I do mixed use here? And so rather than take those considerations in a vacuum, let's take a look at the picture. Let's see where that would lead us, and let's see where the opportunities are. And so what this report really lays out is, what's the general plan's role? What policy do we have along this corridor? Let's get a snapshot of the vacancies and the size of spaces along the corridor. And let's take a look at where right now our commercial uses are concentrated. Where are our nodes? Where are our commercial nodes? Where are those really important sites? And let's identify potential opportunities. And keep in mind now, this look tonight that you're getting is really preliminary. It's staff's version of sort of a comprehensive look at a focused area. I mean, we can take this a lot further, but this is sort of step one in a multi-step process. And so one of the questions we're asking here is, you know, where are the opportunity sites? Where could we do some future corridor planning? So stepping back, both our 1980 general plan and our 2025, our most recent general plan, really talk about focusing on the El Camino Real Strip. They both had policies, and we still do have policies today that are really good, talking about transforming the El Camino Real Strip into a distinctive, attractive, and efficient commercial, office, and industrial park area, so that's clean industrial, which can provide for the long-term economic viability of the community. What we're seeing today is generally we have a trend that we have a jobs housing balance that is offset. We are a housing rich community. It makes it very challenging to support services and support roads and support infrastructure and have that good balance. So what we're, you know, the end goal is that we have something that's a little healthier, that we can have the economic development to support the community, but while still accommodating the housing. So right now, our general plan, you know, it generally establishes land uses along the corridor. The land use map provides general direction. The zoning takes it a step further and dials it in a little closer and refines it down to what can happen on each property. So those policies and programs that we have in our general plan right now, they're great. They talk about economic development. They talk about incentivizing things to happen. And they talk about good design. So there are really good things in place. That's not the component that really needs a lot of attention. And what we've done to try and facilitate that is we've put forth policies and strategic planning, such as the prime commercial locations and the hotspots, to really try and focus energy in specific areas. For example, that prime commercial sites policy we adopted years ago, we sort of modified it over time. It really attempted to focus retail and commercial within specific sites. It was really done with the intention of protecting prime commercial. We looked at the entire corridor, and there was about 11 sites that we said, hey, we need to really focus on these particular sites. Later on, we talked about commercial hotspots, and that really refined that down. That was more recently, in 2013. The idea was to really focus development, shifting, you know, to looking at these specific sites. How can we make some things happen? Recently, we took one of those off of there. That was a Deku Lumber property. But and some of these actually are moving forward with development, such as the Westfront Village restaurant pads. That's now moving forward. The Home Depot Spring Hill Center, that hotel is now finished. Walmart, we have the plans in. Downtown, that property is being marketed. There could be a new property owner. We do have a new property owner in Colony Square. So if you look at that, we could actually do a pretty good checkbox on the hotspots. And we started to check things off. It's looking pretty good. 4 or 5 years from now, you know, it could be a really nice thing. So now, you know, it's time to shift our attention possibly to other things. What else can we do? Where can we shift to looking at the underutilized or undeveloped sites that we have elsewhere along the corridor? And so when we did a tour of those sites, we tried to point out some of those issue areas, some of the things where we need to really focus on. So it's quite a stretch, you know, 7 miles for a commercial corridor in a community with our population is somewhat unprecedented. It's really stretched out, and it's stretched thin. Most of it has got a zoning designation or a general plan designation of general commercial. It's kind of intermixed with service uses, commercial park. It's about 540 acres that have direct access to El Camino Real or Highway 101. It's also sprinkled in with residential buildings, but there's a lot of non-residential buildings. The difficult thing about it, the one thing I'll point out there, is the average building size is small, about 4,000 square feet. Small, that's small in terms of commercial buildings. Right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have Alfredo talk to you about some of the details that we found out there. This was sort of a multi-step effort, and we looked at some of those statistics. I'm going to have him give you some of those raw numbers.
Thank you, Phil. So, as Phil had mentioned, it's a 7-mile-long corridor, lots of uses. So this generally gives you an idea of what is this. And these aren't necessarily land use categories that you see out of the general plan. These are more of what's on the ground today. Well, what are the boots? What are the straps on the ground? So generally speaking, general commercial is anything under the sun in terms of retail sales. The next categories are multifamily, apartments, townhomes, those type of items along El Camino Real. And we have single-family homes. And we do have single-family homes that have direct access, particularly between San Anselmo Road and the north of the downtown, going up to Del Rio and a little bit beyond Del Rio. So we do have a significant amount of single-family as well. What are our public uses? Our public uses are a big one, Atascadero State Hospital, the Sunken Gardens. Those type of uses are categorized under the public uses. There's the open space, and that open space is actually concentrated on the south of the town near Dove Creek. Professional uses or office uses are office, medical, those type of uses that are clearly of office type professions that utilize the El Camino Real corridor as their home. Our repair and services, about 8%. That's mainly concentrated on the south end of the corridor. So we're talking pretty much uses predominantly along Curber Rail or south of Curber Rail, between Curber Rail and Santa Rosa. That's where the predominantly concentration of repair and services, automobile, etc. Light industrial is another additional use. That's actually consists of one of our larger uses is a batch plant or a concrete mixing facility that has direct access to El Camino Real that's been in the community for quite some time. And then finally, we have our downtown uses, which is a mix of uses which you see in and around the downtown. So we were tasked by the City Council in November, right after we heard about the Solano Avenue general plan amendment. We brought that to Council in November, and staff began taking a look at the corridor. So what we did is we focused on the following, the non-residential uses along the El Camino Real, or ECR. We took a look at the downtown area. So those uses, not only along El Camino Real, but a little bit deeper in that were zoned downtown commercial and downtown office. We also took a look at the residential uses with direct access to El Camino Real. So what that means is if there is a flag lot that protruded not just one residential use, but two or three or four uses, or four lots, we included that in the study area. One thing that I just want to stress is this vacancy analysis that we present to you this evening. It's a snapshot in time. We basically took the last 2 weeks of January going out on foot, going out via car, verifying, going up to the buildings, taking a look through windows, seeing if we could see if there was vacant or not. We did a very diligent study going block by block, myself and a couple of the interns, and we took a look at this. We were looking for four lease signs. We were looking for our known vacant buildings that we have around town, which we do have those. We took a look at building permit data. A great example is the former Spencer Center. While currently it sits vacant, it actually has a building permit that's in process and ready to be issued. So that was not counted. And then again, visual verification and business contact. So if there was a verification and there's a business line that was posted there, we'd actually call it. If it was disconnected, we determine it was vacant. If it was actually, you know, someone answered, determine it wasn't vacant. So we did do a little bit of diligence, which did take some time to get done. So what is the findings? Approximately 63 partial or total vacancies. Now, what constitutes a partial vacancy? A great example is Adobe Plaza. Adobe Plaza has a few vacant spaces, but it's one whole building. So that's considered a partial vacancy. Conversely, the Creekside building, that's a complete building that's owned by us, but we kept it off the list for various reasons, which I'll get to in a minute. But that would be considered a total vacancy. So throughout the El Camino Real corridor, and as Phil had mentioned, we are just strictly looking at the corridor, so not along traffic way north or going east towards the Salinas River, or conversely, not along Morro Road. The vacant amount of space is about 187,000 square feet. The average vacant space, and as Phil alluded to, the average space along the El Camino Real is 4,000 square feet. The average vacant space is less than that. It's at 2,983 square feet. And again, a lot has to do with the fact that that's so spread out along that 7-mile corridor. The total vacancy rate is 7.4%. So we did that based on the total square footage and the estimated amount of vacant square feet. So we had that long million-plus number of square foot divided by the amount of vacant space gives our total vacancy rate. Now, we did have some notable exceptions that we did pull out for this study. These ones include the former Spencer Center, as I alluded to, it already has a building permit that's ready to be issued. The second one is a portion of Smart and Final. At the time of this study, we were in talks with Smart and Final, and they came in during the middle of the study. So we pulled out about 30,000 square feet for the Smart and Final building, and that's supposed to open in the next few weeks. The downtown Jack in the Box site was also excluded because of its known leasing issues. We've worked numerous times with many, many people wanting that spot, but due to issues from the corporate parent company of Jack in the Box, we can't seem to get a user in that building. So we basically knocked it off the list. The other one, which you hear a lot of chatter about in the community, is the Carlton Hotel restaurant site. That's not actively being listed, so we excluded it off the site. It's currently being used as a venue for events. That's the hotel proprietor's use, and if they want to bring in a restaurant use, fantastic. But at this point, we took it off the list. And finally, one of our larger vacancies is the Creekside building. As a successor agency owns this building that is currently not being marketed due to numerous state regulations, so that was also off the list. So that does knock down our vacancy rate ever so slightly. So let's take a look at it just a little bit closer at a glance. So when you start breaking down these numbers, the largest vacancy area is what's considered our general and commercial retail at 4.7%. That is significantly higher than most of our other neighbors. But our office professional and our service manufacturing has a relatively low vacancy rate. So, as Phil had alluded to earlier this evening, we have had numerous amount of great uptick of companies wanting to relocate here to the city. But it's a matter of matching their needs and their desires to locate here in the city. With such a low vacancy rate, it puts space at a premium. So we're having essentially two 800-pound gorillas coming at you. We have a residential pressure, and we have a pressure to bring in jobs who want to relocate here but not enough space. And that's telling in these numbers that you see before you on the screen. As a comparison to our neighbors, our industrial and office vacancies are lower than Paso and San Luis. This is based on data that was provided by Beacon Economics and Stanford McCarty Commercial Real Estate. Retail vacancies are significantly higher. As you can see in the city of San Luis, the retail vacancy is less than 2%. In Paso, it's less than 3%. Ours is at 4.7. Again, going back to when you start looking at the statistics, our spaces are smaller. The amount of vacant spaces are even much smaller. Our average space is about 4,000 square feet. So that's very telling because it's a small space. So some businesses that want to start up need to hit a sweet spot. We obviously don't have that right now. Our rents are also actually lower here than the other cities. So our rent ranges from 80 cents a square foot, which is fantastic. It's a great startup rate, up to $2. But when compared to Paso, San Luis, specifically, if you look at the downtown Paso, downtown San Luis, those rates are astronomical to start that up. So there are goods and bads, but at the same token, you can see that it's really shifting with the market. So we have a very, very large, significant vacancy rate in retail comparative to our other cities. However, the rents are reflecting that. So the question is why? So most of our retail space has been developed between the 1970s and 1990s. We really have had a lack of facade investment by property owners. Looking back in about 5 years' worth of building permit history, we've only had really two facade renovations. That's it. What does that mean? Well, that means that property owners aren't reinvesting those monies into the properties that they have today for various reasons. And again, our largest inventory of vacant spaces are less than 2,500 square feet. That's not a lot of space, especially for a retail operation, because not only does a retail operation have to have area for back room, an area for office. Sometimes they need a bathroom, depending on the uses. So that when you start eating that all up, that's not a lot of space, which means that these spaces that are smaller will remain to just sit. And so there's really no incentive for any property owner to just go out and do a renovation if no one's really going to go there because the spaces are so small. So it's a tough sort of slippery slope that we start going down in terms of the existing inventory of space. So where are our vacancy concentrations? And there are actually three locations within this study. The first one is the top aerial. We have a vacancy concentration located along San Anselmo and El Camino Real. So it's mainly our Kmart Center and spots just a bit of north of downtown. So we've noticed a concentration of there. So particularly in the Kmart Center, we have a large anchor tenant Kmart, but the various support pads, we have numerous multiple vacancies in those support pads. The second area is the downtown. So the downtown did have some concentration. You hear about it from a lot of residents about vacant buildings in the downtown and not enough uses in the downtown. We also see this as a part of this snapshot in time. Why is that? And we'll get to that in a minute. The second one is, or the last one is stuff around curb and rail. So at the time in January 2016, Hagen's had already vacated. So the Hagen's / Albertson Center really became this depressed location in terms of no large anchor tenant. The Wendy's drive-thru has sat vacant for quite some time. And so really there was nothing to sort of create the synergy that previously once was there in that center. So that's where we saw a large concentration of vacant spaces as well. So there's no real single factor for the cause of vacancies, a bunch of issues. The first one is, again, the large anchor tenants vacating spaces create that lack of synergy. You see that currently right now at the former Spencer Center. We don't have an anchor tenant. So the businesses that are there, they rely on whatever business practice they're doing to bring people into the door. They don't have that anchor tenant that people flock to go to and then say, hey, there's a shop right there. I'm just going to go there right now. The second one is the absentee property owner. So those are property owners that own property but aren't around. They just collect the rent, and that's about it. We do have those, particularly in the downtown. So we're trying to actively work with those property owners to really let them know what's going on in the community, but they just don't want to be here. So we consider them the absentee property owners. The third one is that spaces don't fit the needs of the business. And that's sort of what I said earlier. You have a retail space, you have to be cognizant of office. You have to be cognizant of where you're going to store your goods and items. So sometimes those spaces that are available really just don't work out for you. This is very, very particular in folks that want to open up restaurants. Opening up a restaurant, one, it's a very challenging thing, and kudos to those folks that go and do it. But at the same token, opening up a restaurant where there's no hood, no kitchen can be one really costly endeavor. That doesn't fit my space needs, so I'm not going to even bother looking at that space, even though it's a prime location for my restaurant, because I have to sink so much money into that, and the landlord doesn't want to invest that. So it's a catch-22 each time I'm trying to meet my space needs for my business, and it's just not fitting what's out there today. And then some vacancies are merely temporary. A great example of that temporary vacancy ideology is the Albertsons. Albertsons left, was bought by Hagen's. Hagen's went kaput, and Smart & Final swooped it up. It took them a while to finally get out of the bankruptcy court, get their plans in the door, get them approved, under construction, and open. That's a temporary vacancy. And so, like I said, when this study was done in January, they're looking at opening up the next 2-3 weeks. That's a temporary vacancy. And hopefully that brings back a little bit more synergy to that center with the added traffic. So what are these vacancy trends? As I said earlier, the low cost of rent is fantastic for an initial startup. So if I'm starting a business and I have a low cost of rent, that's the first thing I'm looking to as part of my business plan, if I even have a business plan, which I'm hoping I do. But some people don't have that. So that can lead to marginal business ventures. Those are business ventures that people just look at the space to rent, they have an idea, but they don't really think it through, and they, well, you know what, I can just do this, and they open up the business. They don't get the help that they need to really channel the energy and get the drive and get the business where they need it to be. So that can be a marginal business, which is why sometimes with these smaller spaces, one day you see a business, the next day you see another one, the third day you see a new one. It's a marginal business venture. there's no incentive for a property owner to reinvest. That's a huge one. If I'm a property owner and if I own a building since the 1970s, I really have no incentive. If I can get someone coming in for tomorrow, the next day, doesn't matter. If they go out of business, there's always someone else going to come up. There's no incentive for me to invest money into my property because my property taxes will go up. So right now, there's no incentive for some of these property owners out there to really invest money, do new signage, reinvest in the facades, do some upgrades that are needed along those buildings. It's just not there. Our retail corridor at 7 miles for our population is really spread out. It was evident as a part of the study. It's been talked about in the 1980 general plan. It was talked about in the 1992 general plan. It was talked about in the 1997 general plan update. It's talked about in our 2002 general plan that we have today. It's spread out. That can be problematic. The other one is issues outside of the quote-unquote market. Great example is Jack in the Box. It sat there vacant for such a long time. There's a good reason for that. The property owner is currently receiving rent from a very large corporation. There's really no incentive for him to go outside of that rent that he's already receiving just to have the building sit vacant. Eventually, that's going to end. But at this point, that's a market force that we just can't foresee. So what does all this do? All this creates a lack of synergy in some parts of the city. That lack of synergy can be due to multiple fronts. One, not having a large anchor tenant. But another one is just having similar land uses exist in multiple zoning districts. A great example is this idea of light manufacturing. When I think of light manufacturing, I think of something that I'm going to tinker with and I may need some parts and tools and it may make a little bit of noise. In the city of Atascadero, normally outside of, you know, when we think about that, it's normally either an industrial zone or in a commercial services zone, which makes sense as a part of just overall basic zoning principles. Here in the city of Atascadero, you can do light manufacturing in the industrial zone, the CBK zone, the general commercial zone, the service commercial zone. I can keep going on and on about doing light manufacturing. That's a lot of zones to open up. While flexibility is fantastic, it can also lead to bad things and not intended uses that you originally intended as a part of your general plan. This whole idea of synergy also comes back to the depression of rents. So not having a synergy, not being where you want to be. A great example of synergy that's currently happening is the Del Rio Road, El Camino Real intersection. With Walmart coming on board, we have had so many calls from really interested developers about picking up properties. And the first question out the chute is, when is Walmart going to open? How quickly can I get a building permit? That center alone has created so much synergy in the development world for Atascadero. It's insane. And right now, we already have property owners that are working together to just meet timelines of when Walmart's going to open up. That's the type of synergy you want to have. Businesses, specifically retail, rely on visibility. Location, location, location. That's the real estate motto. Businesses rely on that, and they rely on that synergy. Business parks and other job-generating ventures, those outside of the retail force, those businesses that really provide good-paying jobs for that job-housing balance, they have a different set of needs. They have space needs. They have parking needs. Those are completely different from retail. So knowing that a business, if we want to start generating these job-generating land uses here in town, we need to have a different subset, a different ideology, and a different thinking. So knowing all this about our corridor, we got to also take a look at the other side of the coin, which is our residential market. So we already know that our vacancies are really low in office and industrial, and they're high in the retail. But at the same time, as Phil had said, our residential market, we are housing rich. And our residential market numbers show that. So the new construction remains robust. Currently, we have 176 permits that are under housing units that are under construction. On top of that, we have what's called existing entitlements. So what does that mean? Existing entitlements means that projects or pieces of land already have the entitlements that have gone before either the Planning Commission or the City Council to construct a project. All they simply have to do is follow what has been already approved, get a building permit, and off they go. We have over 460 units, what we considered entitled. So between the 176 that we have and the 467, that's over 600 units right then and there. That's considered our pipeline. That's our 18-month pipeline. That's reasonably foreseeable to be constructed between the next 18 to 24 months. The next one is what's the largest chunk of that pie chart is potential units undergoing entitlement review. Those are units that we are currently in the planning department reviewing. They've not been approved by either the planning commission or you as a city council. A big chunk of that is Eagle Ranch. However, there are still significant amount of projects that are in the entitlement review stage, particularly under the multifamily side. So as a part of your tour with Phil, we gave you a set of maps, and we'd like to go over that for this presentation for the public today. So again, just to give you an idea of where are our housing units being constructed, entitled, and what's going on in the world today. So we broke it down into four subsections of the community. There's the north, the central, the south, and the west side. So on the north end, we have the Oak Haven Village, currently under construction. 15 units are already under construction now, but 47 have been completed. The next one is the Carrizo Road, which you just recently heard at the beginning of January. They're in the building permit process now. They're hoping to get construction started in spring. The next three projects down, one being the Emerald Ridge, that's a very large project. The Annex as well, the Annex has 6 units. And then the Walmart residential multifamily, it's approximately 42 units. So those three projects alone are looking at almost 200 units. Those are what we considered entitled. Let me focus in on Emerald Ridge really quick. We've been working with the property owner of Emerald Ridge. They want to ditch their existing entitlement, and they want to take advantage of the existing zoning. They actually want to put more units on there. So that just gives you an idea of what's going on in the north end of town. In the center of the community, we have two projects that are out there. Two of them, one of them being actively marketed as the Acacias, that was approved in the mid-2000s, and then Colony Square. And so we've had discussions with developers to sort of retake a look at and possibly redo Colony Square. But those are projects that are in the pipeline that could be potentially constructed within the next 18 to 24 months. Now we come to the south end of town. This is our booming mecca, thanks to many favorable items in terms of zoning, in terms of location to San Luis, etc. The orange items are our multifamily, so we have a lot of multifamily projects currently ongoing in construction. The biggest one is actually the Knolls at the Avenida, or the project formerly known as Atascadero Family Apartments. They are currently in the door at 64 units, so we've currently issued a building permit for them, and that's going to start construction very quickly here. Southside Villas is another project that's currently ongoing, a significant amount of construction right now, as well as the Woodridge Townhomes, all 35 units. The last leg of the Woodlands Las Lomas specific plan is currently under construction. So as you can see, we already have a lot of booming construction ongoing today on the south end of town. On top of that, we have entitled projects that are rolling along with that. So recently entitled was the Atascadero Groves. And we also have a couple that are hanging out there, like Spanish Ridge and the Principal Mixed Use. And right now, the Principal Mixed Use project at 38 units has an active buyer who wants to actively pick that up and start construction within the next year and a half. So the south end continues that boom. On top of that, we have projects in the multifamily zone that are particularly under pre-app review. I'm going to point out to two more projects right next to the Knolls at the Avenida. The first one is the Hayden Oaks 2. Owned by Mr. Zappas at 24 units. He'll be going in for DRC review in the next few weeks. So he wants to move forward as quickly as he can to get those apartment buildings started. The next one is the Hartenberg project at 72 units, which was a senior residential living facility with a townhouse project. The DRC saw this in late fall. Mr. Hartenberg will be moving in very quickly to get that entitled as well. So the south end is booming. We have a lot of units just on that south end alone. Now to our west side. Oak Ridge Estates, under construction right now, slowly but surely, but they have a significant amount of units as well as ongoing. We have People's Self-Help Housing that's currently under construction. And then the large one is that Eagle Ranch project that's hanging out there. As you know, that's been a very large project, and that, you know, should be going before council within the next year. in a year and a half. So there's a lot of construction. There's a lot of units. So what does this ultimately mean? We have over 1,400 units in the pipeline. Our city regional housing needs, basically our RENA, is we have a five-year target. We're supposed to accommodate 312 total units by 2019. I think we're going to do a good job in meeting that goal. However, very similar to our commercial, there are opportunities for infill along the corridor. Particularly, we took a very cursory look at what's out there today. There are only three RMF parcels available today that have no entitlements. So that's only 130 to 156 units. There's not a lot out there. In the RSFX zone, if a property owner wishes to do a PD, they can potentially get 26 units. That's it. That's all that we have zoned. So that's why you're seeing that pressure today of folks that are coming in, asking about these underutilized commercial parcels. They've sat vacant for so long. They want to flip it to residential because residential is, from the last screens, it's hot. So you have that pressure to, you know, convert those commercial properties to residential uses. But at the same token, it's a very similar story to the commercial. We don't have that much, but there's opportunity that's available for that infill along the corridor. And so I'm going to turn it back over to Phil to discuss what does this all mean and how do we go to the future.
Thanks, Alfredo. So back just to the whole balance discussion, in addition to the fact that there's a very limited multifamily land left, there's actually a very limited amount of available commercial land, and especially commercial land that can be packaged together to make that larger parcel. We frequently get requests for properties that can accommodate a 10,000, a 50,000 square foot building for something that can handle research and development, for example, or business park uses. Those are the challenging things, and those are the things that we need to accommodate in our community. So what we did as part of the study is just try and focus in on a few opportunity areas. Where could these areas be in the future? Where could we combine parcels to make something happen? Where do we have potential interface issues? You know, where do we have the availability of infrastructure and city services? And how should we look at supporting our future commercial nodes for other uses, retail uses? And where should we look for a support for job creation uses? Now, when I start talking about these things, typically you talk about these things as a citywide general plan amendment. We're not in that mode right now. We don't need to be in that mode right now. We have a great general plan. But instead, what we should be doing is looking to where we can try and incentivize or focus development, or as we do get pressure to rezone things, I think this study helps us make that decision. So taking a look back at the maps, and these are the maps that we shared with you on our driving tour, I'm just going to point out a few of the highlight areas. There's several others that we're not going to cover tonight, but for example, at the San Anselmo El Camino Real area, there's several very deep, significant retail parcels there right now that are vacant. There's also sort of the underutilized property, the former Atascadero Ford. This area could be a future potential for business park uses or expansion of retail. Shifting further to the south, the property that was the topic for a potential rezone there behind Stylehouse Furniture by Solano Avenue, looking at putting together parcels there, that is, you know, potential business park area. A lot of the area is already developed that way. So that's a very interesting potential for future planning considerations. Now, some of the other areas, just as on the flip side, just won't have a lot of future potential. For example, Uptown Atascadero, it's a retail zone that's extremely narrow. That's common, I think, throughout the city, where we have a very narrow strip of commercial that is fronting El Camino Real. And those areas are areas that are often too dotted in with former colony homes and other uses that just probably aren't going to change. So those are the areas that really could accommodate mixed use. They could even accommodate some infill residential, and that wouldn't be impending upon our potential to really expand the commercial. So that's what this study gives us, areas that, hey, we should protect for commercial, areas that, hey, may, you know, be eligible for other uses. And then there's the areas that are around the future Walmart, a lot of underutilized parcels in that area. If you wanted to focus additional development, there's a lot of potential in that area. And we're getting a lot of requests and questions about that area. And then there's other areas that are currently residential where we could question, is that the best end use for that property? This particular highlighted property here lies on the west side of 101 at the Del Rio intersection with freeway frontage. Is that the best location for a rural residential project, which is 1.5, 2.5 acre lot size minimums? So that's a question to ask. And tonight, you know, we're not going to give you answers to these questions. I think that's a bigger community-wide effort. That's an effort where I think we not only have council input on, we have community input on, and maybe there's further planning adventures that look into that. So just to sum it up, I mean, some of our observations, obviously El Camino Real is our primary economic engine, but there's a few issues. It's somewhat diluted. In other words, it's spread out. I think we've tried to focus retail development in so many areas, and some of it's spread so thin that maybe we need to look at that and say, okay, how is it really developed? It might be developed more as industrial or light industrial or commercial. So maybe we should focus on and really having those uses in certain areas while sort of narrowing down that commercial retail focus to certain corridors, certain spots, and make those spots richer. There's definitely a lack of available spaces that are greater than 5,000 square feet. As Alfredo mentioned, a lot of the vacancies are for spaces that are small, less than 2,500. We generally have a lack of big open flat land that we can accommodate clean industrial and job generating uses. And we definitely have that need for a better jobs housing balance. And it's probably easy to say at this point that conversions of commercial land along the corridor could really hinder that future potential. So what now? We do already have the great general plan in place. This study is just the first step in really showing you the issues and the opportunities. Things are changing. Downtown's now progressing. Regional retail is moving forward at Del Rio. Should we shift to looking at some of these underutilized sites? And so this study is sort of the first step in identifying that path forward. And that concludes our presentation, and we'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. Well, let me be the first to say I think you've done an outstanding job jumping in here fairly new and working with our existing staff to really pull some resources. I thought the trip we got to go on and actually a tour of the sites was very helpful. And this is the best analysis of what we have that I've seen. So I think you've done a really good job with that. I'm going to open up to council questions and comments, and then we will go to the public. This is not an action item. We cannot take action tonight. This is a preliminary to probably some strategic planning and or possibly looking at zoning changes or other things down the road. So this is just for any input to staff that they might want to look at getting a feel for our consensus, or maybe if we have some research areas that we'd like you to do some more research on, or Councilwoman Fonza, who is always very thorough and I'm sure has some things. So I'm going to start with Councilwoman Fonza and then Councilman Kelly.
Thank you. This is an excellent report. This really spotlights some of the concerns we had at strategic planning. I want to thank you specifically for that. What was very interesting to me was the 1,420 residential units in the pipeline for development when our regional housing needs says a total of 312 units by 2019. We are extremely out of balance here, and we need to consider maybe a timeout for residential. I don't know how to approach that, and maybe you can tell me, but one of the concerns I have is how many of these residential units that were the 1,420 are actually along El Camino Real. Do we have a clue?
We don't have that differential for you tonight, but we can probably answer that later on. So, yeah, because the 1,420, a lot of them are detached from El Camino Real. We might be able to get a quick snapshot of that. I'm looking at Alfredo.
I know there's a lot of residential multifamily down on the south end that are coming through Hartburg in particular and across the street on Principal and others. And my concern is we're going to see this percentage on your pie chart change considerably in a year or two. to an extremely high amount of residential along El Camino.
Certainly, so very possible.
I'd like to see an update on that sometime in the near future, if we could. You said that the space doesn't fit the needs of the business. I think that's right on the button, that our commercial areas are often too small for businesses that might want to come. And I don't know what the solution to that is, but that would be one of the things I'd like to see come forward, how we make those spaces fit the needs of the business. First, we need to know what the businesses are that are considering coming, or what we see as a future trend, whether it's a marketplace with many smaller businesses inside a larger building. I don't know. Perhaps you have a better idea on that than we do, but we need some information on that. I think packaging and combining parcels might be the solution, and how we go about that, I'm not sure. I don't know whether you have any ideas on how we get disparate owners to come together and do something together. It's always been a problem downtown, so we have very small, tiny businesses in some cases, very little frontage, very little parking, and it's hard for businesses to make it. One of the concerns I had is the mixed use, and we use this term probably to mean residential and commercial, but I think that may not be what we want to do. I'd like to see some of that tightened up. It might be industrial and commercial. It's still mixed use. It's not just one use. It's multiple uses, but we might want to tighten up our zoning by putting mixed use industrial commercial or mixed use office industrial or some other ways of thinking about mixed use and not using that term so glibly when we talk to the public when they come in and say, well, what can I do here? So we look at the space down near Dove Creek, and we always say mixed use, but maybe what we need is a technical park. I don't know. We need to think about this a different way. So I'm trying to put that idea out there for possible thought. You said that we need to tighten up, and this was Alfredo, the light industrial zoning, that people come in and they want to swing the hammer and build something and invent something. I think being a entrepreneur is a wonderful thing, and we want to promote that entrepreneur in the garage, and then he goes to a little bit bigger building, and then he has the warehouse and, you know, employs many people. I think we need to have some progression and maybe some thought about where those types of businesses can be startups and then go further down and still fit into a Tascadero, that we have an imbalance between our jobs here. People go to San Luis to work. They go to Paso Robles to work. Really, our only industry is the state hospital and government. We have very small businesses. And I'd like to get a vision for what we could do. And I'm not sure how to get there, but I'm going to lay that on your plate. And it isn't exactly a question, but it's a request. So those are my concerns. I think this is a good place to start. I'd kind of like to think of this as a policy time for the council to give you your head and let you run with it and see what you come back with. Thank you.
Thank you. The third time.
Thank you.
Councilman Kelly, followed by Councilman Sturdivant.
Yes, I just want to commend you. I think that's one of the best reports that I have ever heard in this city regarding the future. I think we've floundered around for years of dealing with the present. You know, what are we doing now? And you guys have come forward to look at the future, where we should go, which I think is really, really the way to go. Because the retail commercial markets are changing so much with the internet, the way people shop and what have you. And I think we have to come in tune with not only the present, but where is the future going? And the other thing is, as I've mentioned in the past, I've gone to the International Conference of Shopping Centers. And what businesses look at and what they require are people. You have to have people to support the businesses. And I agree with Mrs. Fonsi. I think the residential numbers are pretty high there. But I think we got to make sure that we have the correct business or ratio, that we do have enough people to support the businesses that we want. I know we interviewed, you know, several chain businesses and tried to get them to come to Tascadero. And they actually have a formula that comes right down. And we don't hit enough people to support them. So I think part of the plan is try to maybe produce more people so that we can get some of these bigger deals. But I want to commend you. I thought it was a great, great report. Very realistic, what really the real world is doing. And I hope to work with it in the future and help you guys. And I agree with Roberta. Let's cut you guys loose and let you go out there. You guys are the experts, and you need to tell us what we should do. And hopefully we can accept almost everything you tell us, unless we have a little bit of criticism. But I have all the confidence in the world that you guys have done a good job, and you will do a good job in the future. And I just want to thank you and the rest of your crew that aren't here tonight.
Councilman Sturdivant.
Well, that was an excellent report. And I really appreciate the awareness that you've raised for me when it comes to, with the drive-by that we did with this report, the commercial land that we have here on the El Camino, but it's in different forms I never saw, like the cement plant. And looking at that in conjunction with the Spencer's area, that type of thinking it just got me thinking that we really haven't we have been floundering with these decisions, and rather than having a policy for the future, so that when future development comes, we can have a solid plan in place that will fit into an overall scheme. So I really appreciate that awareness, raising that awareness. Actually, I have a request as well. I'd like to just see if just go off and do whatever in your planning experience and looking at the El Camino, and just coming up with what would be in the optimum layout, conceptual idea of where nodes should be, where we are as compared to where we are today, and where they would best be located, so we can kind of see where we are today, how we could morph into that, just something to just out there. In other words, if it's by number of cars or foot traffic or whatever it may be, where it would be best if there was a node here or wherever that, however that laid out, and then we could actually see that and say, well, you know, maybe if that parcel did come available, maybe there's a way we could work things out and just kind of work towards that optimum end, is kind of what I'm thinking in my mind, because I'm not a developer, I'm not a planner, but I know that where we are today is not where we want to be, and I know that this is giving us an idea of the possibilities, and if they have a vision, it's going to help us to get from where we are today to fulfill that vision over time. So that's a request that I have. Along with, you mentioned about the multiple land, there's so many similar land uses in different zoning districts. I'd like to see that tightened up so we can be more specific when we do have different areas. Like I remember one time, I think we talked about different zones. I remember we had a discussion years ago about different zones in the city, and being more specific as to what we want, where we want it, and being deliberate in that. So other than that, I think this is the right, having guidelines for future policy decisions is a wonderful thing to have. And I see this as a first step to doing that. But I really appreciate the hard work. Excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
The risk of being repetitive, great job. And definitely learned a lot in really seeing the locations and looking at the depth of a parcel and kind of understanding what are the possibilities there versus the shallow ones and what we have, what we don't have. So that was very educational. I think it's really looking at what we have in the general plan, and the general plan for, you know, since 1980 has called for, you know, cutting up that strip or making it distinctive. And so I think that's where we're really moving with this, and that's what I think is important, what the community has wanted to do for a long time. And I tend to be an impatient one, and, you know, kind of want it all to happen now. But again, it's kind of keeping in mind we are a fairly young city. You know, a lot of people forget. You tell them we haven't fully been around since 1979 as an incorporated city, and people go, oh, I didn't realize Atascadero was that new or that young. So, you know, we've still had some growing pains, but we're really seeing us, you know, moving forward into this vision that I think has been there all along, but a bit of a rocky road to get there. So I think that distinctive, attractive, efficient, you know, strip that we're talking about, and how do we segment that? I would agree with what Councilmember Sturdivant was saying. I too am concerned about the concentration of residential. Even if you take out, Eagle Ranch, we're still at almost three times our RENA numbers for 2019, and that that's a little bit that's disconcerting to me in terms of the balance there. And I would say the idea of the general commercial being such a catch-all, I think, is maybe something we want to look at. I understand flexibility, but I know we've also had before this council, and I'm sure others, you know, items come before us that we have no way to not approve, right, if they meet certain legal requirements. And everybody, you know, for the most part in the community and even up here is going, oh, that's really not what we mean for that area. And so to the extent that we can keep a flexibility, we're not trying to dictate, okay, these only these kind of businesses, and we're not trying to be snooty in any way. We really, though, want to have some personality, right, in this area and what's best here for, like you said, industrial, or, you know, we kind of keep this for retail. Or how do we do that? And, you, again, you're the experts at that, but I think that is important. And clearly it's been the plan all along to get there. So thank you. Good job.
Well, looks like you're going to be able to take the rest of the evening off here. It's excellent. I will add, I do think we began with a very good vision. I do think E.G. Lewis was ahead of his time and in some ways laid out our self-sufficiency and had a good base and certainly a great architectural style. And however, there's been a lot of challenges over time, you know, freeways going through our community, and the county's management really probably more than the city has had an opportunity to manage, and we did have a lot of things. But I think we have then survived an earthquake and really the worst recession I've ever experienced. And amazingly, we've come through it all doing pretty well. And now we're in a position, there's sometimes it's good to be behind because we are so well positioned with lowest cost water, lowest cost wastewater treatment plant, lowest cost property available, and I'd say access to a lot of people because you got two state highways by going right through us. And there's lots of folks, and we have more overpasses than any other community in the county. We just got to get them off the freeway and shopping. But so I agree. I think we have to be careful on it's always been a challenge on the job housing shopping imbalance, and I think we have to really look at how we can incentivize constructing the commercial areas that fit what is needed. And I wish we still had redevelopment, but we may have to look once we define what we really need, given this assessment, we're going to have to get creative and aggressive, I think, in looking how do we finance what we need to do, whether we make some investments or we certainly encourage or incentivize outside investors to reconfigure commercial areas and be cautious not to take that immediate opportunity, that easy immediate choice, versus we've got to think long-term, big picture. How do we want to position our city 20 years plus down the road to be financially independent? So I think you're right on the right track, and you really got the staff to do the job. So I think you've kind of been given direction to keep going in the direction you're going and bring back some additional recommendations, especially on the zoning issues and reconfiguring. We still have some more council input, and then we will open to the public. Councilman Fonzi.
I forgot one. I know that there's several, actually quite a number of smaller colony homes along El Camino, and I wonder if staff has taken that into any kind of thought process that we want to maintain those that have historical value, but many of them really don't. And so I think it might be helpful if the staff could do some digging into that a little bit. We don't want to lose our heritage, but yet if they've been chopped up or changed or stuccoed over or whatever it is, and they have no historical value at this point in time, they may not be the highest and best use.
Thank you. Seeing no other council input, I'll open up to the public. Welcome your input on this item.
Hi, Tyler Finley. Yeah, incredible report. I have to agree with Bob Kelly.
I also believe that, you know, that 1,400 number is really high, right? But now, with Walmart coming in, and if our population increases so that our number of residents per commercial or restaurant or whatever, if that is so out of whack, like we were saying, wouldn't that be attractive for businesses to say this is a viable market? They have a lot of people in this town with little retail and available to them. I don't know. So I'm actually pro housing. I would see that if this was a town that wasn't defined by you worked here, obviously, you have so many pending permits. Why are they coming here? They're not coming here for jobs. So I don't know why you want to promote job growth here, because they're not coming here for jobs here in the first place. So if you had more residents, wouldn't you have more visitors at the library, more people involved with the Dancing with the Stars? That's about it. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Seeing none approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the council. And I guess that's been part of the analysis. You're right. You get more folks coming, they want to use the library and other services. Unfortunately, the residential housing doesn't support the funding for the services. That's been our challenge in the past. So we'll keep working at that. I think that concludes council's input on this, and it's a receive and file. Do you have enough direction, do you think, from council to go forward from here?
Yes, I think that's sufficient for tonight. Thank you. Thank you for your comments so far.
And when would you see, what's the next steps? When might we see the next round coming back to us? Because I think we all agree this is probably a top priority.
Well, I think we should, you know, possibly have some of this discussion as strategic planning and then really lay out a strategy of coming back forward. And I think we have some initial ideas of some pieces that we can help facilitate that discussion. And then it's time to start really involving the greater community as to where, how far this study goes.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on then to, well, we have closed public comment. I will open it briefly.
So in the report, a thought in my head the entire time was, and a key word that was not in there was an attraction. Where is there any talk of, you know, the ice rink or a music venue? Because what I saw with all those pending permits for residential is we're going to have an increasingly underserviced, you know, community for the residents, things to do for the residents. I mean, that's the plague that we still have. And if our residents are going to increase, they're going to go, more people are going to be living here, going away to do stuff, spend money in other places. So that may be cool to have more residents and more community, but if they are going away to spend money, it doesn't make sense to me. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll close public comment for the last time this evening and move on to the next agenda item, which is council announcements and reports. And I thought you would probably be better for you to talk about the League of California
yes.
Cities.
I wanted to make sure I was still correct. I was not involved.
I would assume you would know better than I about the League of California Cities event. So I think that, and we'll have Rochelle correct us if we have. I think that is correct, though.
Okay, if I'm incorrect, please correct me. So yes, I just wanted to let you all know that the upcoming League of California Cities Channel Counties Division dinner will be here in the Rotunda, in this beautiful building, April 15th. It's going to be an evening will include wine and cider tasting plus hors d'oeuvres in the lower rotunda at 5 to 6 p.m. Historic City Hall tour with Historical Society docents from 6 till 7. Correct? Good. Dinner here in the upper rotunda between 7 and 9, catered by Chef Charlie. Wine and cider to be hosted by Tent City Brewing, Vintage Cowboy Winery, and Bristol Cider House. Very good. Well, thank you.
All good stuff.
So make sure that get your RSVPs in.
And I may have gone a little too soon on the discussion on the printery, because I had another thought that I want to bring up. Because I think we could go ahead with what we're currently thinking, but I really think this is a task that I would like to ask the Finance Committee to take a look at, because quite frankly, everything regarding this is going to come down to money. And it's either going to be the city looking at reprioritizing things, or it's, as Bob has suggested, really working and incentivizing private sector to do something. But it's really the, other than the part that Roberta and I like, the fun historical stuff, it really is an issue of money is the missing piece. So I would direct the Finance Committee to even perhaps have a special meeting, because in short order, you're going to have to look at, do you recommend to the council reprioritizing to free up some funds to invest in this or not? Do you prioritize, and I think Bob could help on the end of, okay, what are the options that we might look at incentivizing? You might want to check in with community development, but it's going to be a money issue. And so I seriously think if I had this to do over, I would not have done an ad hoc committee, and I would strongly encourage that the Finance Committee do the initial research on this in short order, because I think we need to let the community know very soon, are we in or out, if there's anything we can personally do financially, or is it really going to be an issue, we move on to the next step. How do we incentivize the private sector to do something, give some direction there? I think that's more of what we need to come back to the council than Bob and I meeting with folks and kind of talking about the good old days of the history. So with that, if you two would accept that, I think that might be a better use of our immediate time.
I was kind of thinking that in the first place, so okay. Thanks for coming around.
Well,
not that we even talked about it, but...
Of course, now you're the one that started this track, so you should have tracked us down a different path. So, Councilman Kelly, how about if we defer our taking the ad hoc approach for the moment and have you guys take the lead on the finance?
I think that's fine. I think that's an excellent idea. I think at the same time, we can look at other stuff, too.
Yeah, we can kind of look at the other aspects, but... let's go look at the finances, which I know is Rochelle's favorite topic to look at, finding money in our budget. And she may be very well incentivized to find ways to incentivize the private sector doing that really quick. Otherwise, council, if they start getting excited, they might want to spend money. So we'll defer that to the Finance Committee. Thank you. So with that, we can move on to our committee reports, unless there's other reports on things outside of committees anyone would like to comment on. Go ahead, Councilwoman.
Yeah, I just want to announce that Lighthouse had their reality tour last night at the Pavilion, and I don't have the numbers, but it was very, very well attended, and the reality tour is... bringing parents and children together, so it's not just for one or the other, but for them to come together, and they kind of go through a mock scenario of an arrest and actually an overdose and a funeral. I cry every time I see it. And then we have Jared Freitas, I believe is his last name, from the probation office, and he talks about different drugs or effects on the body and how to notice the signs, and so especially for parents and seeing their children and or friends of children and what sort of drugs they might be taking. And then we also watched a 17-minute clip of The Other Side of Cannabis in the talk about how some of how it's being bred nowadays is increasing the THC and reducing actually the medical component of it. So there's some of that going on, and so that was very interesting. And then at the end, we break into three groups because there's so many people. And then at the end, they come together, and there's actually a recovering addict who is willing to share his story and be interviewed, and very moving. And so that was, I think, very successful. A lot of people in the community came together to put that on, including Commander Allen from the PD and Mike Stornetta from the fire department, put in their own time doing that. So and many other community members. So an excellent event. Let's see. I also wanted to mention, of course, Dancing with Our Stars, 7th annual, very successful, sold out two nights, raising a lot of money to keep that library going and more improvements that they're going to be doing. So fun event, and congratulations to school board member Mary Kay Mills, who took grand champion on Saturday night. So anyway, thank you to the community, because it's because of all of you, all of your support that this goes off like it does.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly, you had an item before we get to community reports.
Yes, Luke, could you bring up the Lake Fest deal? I've sat in on a couple meetings that these folks are having, and just trying to give them a helping hand. This is the first year that they're putting it on. I've had a little experience doing a couple things. This is going to be a great event. These people are really going out of their way to have a fun day at the Atascadero Lake Park. There'll be a lot of food booths, beer, barbecue. There's going to be a cardboard boat race where the kids will be able to make a boat out of cardboard, and there'll be races in the lake. One of the nice things is I believe it's going to start at 12 p.m. or so. I think those hours might change. And it's the same day as the first concert in the park on Saturday night. So hopefully they're going to try to blend in into the concert on Saturday night. So it'll be a whole fun day at the lake park. In basically the early part of it will be for kids. There's going to be a lot of kids' games, just like we had on the 4th of July. I think you ran the games one year, and it's just a lot of fun. So I would encourage all the people to put that on your calendar. They're also looking for volunteers, and they're also looking for donations. So if you feel comfortable of helping them out, you can go to the friendsofatascaderolake.com for further information. Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to seeing you in a cardboard boat, Councilman Kelly. Other committee, any other council announcements? And then we'll go ahead with committee reports. So why don't we go ahead with Councilman Kelly and work our way this way.
I'll start off with the, I'm on the State Hospital Advisory Board. Their population is increasing as they're changing the requirements of how they get different patients into their hospital. And just like every other government agency, they're being challenged by more oversight and what have you. So they have a very complex situation down there of what they're trying to achieve, but they're doing a real good job. The other thing is I serve on the Homeless Services Oversight Council, and the topic of conversation down there is just like every place else, is how can they provide affordable housing for some of the homeless people because of the Section 8 requirements have changed, and there's more restrictions on how not to do it than to do it. It's really amazing. And so they're trying to figure out how they get some funds where they put some people in these houses. And the way it's set up now, it's only for a short term, so there's no stability in their lives. So they're trying to acquire some funds or work in some programs where some people can get in these houses and we can create some stability where they know they're going to stay there for a year or a year and a half. And at the same time, most of them need to have other requirements, mental addiction or what have you. So that's what the Homeless Oversight Committee is working on at this time.
All right. Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
I have an Economic Vitality Corporation meeting tomorrow. Been going to those monthly. Nothing particular to report. They just, you know, talk a lot about, definitely a lot about San Luis, but the overall county and workforce housing and the different challenges. So always informational, and it's always good to see that, hey, you know, compared to what's going on out there, we're doing well here in Atascadero, and especially when it comes to the housing element, as we saw tonight. And I can't remember if we reported on city schools last time I was
go ahead
I in. I don't have the notes on that. I couldn't remember if we had.
We'll ask Rochelle to maybe give a little quick update on the city schools.
Great. I got to sit in last month, so.
I'm with Heather.
So nothing noteworthy apparently occurred.
Apparently nothing noteworthy.
Nothing
I apologize. They are lively discussions, but.
And I think it really is. I never knew quite what y'all did, but, you know, in going to them, it really is good to come together. It's the couple members of the school board, couple members of the council, and come together and really discuss what's going on and what are our challenges, what's going well. And so I think just it enhances that communication, and it's good to have.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you. Well, Air Pollution Control District, I'm looking with trepidation. Tomorrow we're having a sit-down about civility, and we're going to be meeting with the facilitator, the entire Air Pollution Control District Board, has felt that there was a problem getting along, a lot of infighting, sniping, and other issues, and not a lot of good things happening. So tomorrow, the League of Women Voters are going to teach us how to be civil. So I'll report back to you how that one goes. I attended a local agency formation commission, or LAFCO, meeting, and there was some discussion about the Cayucas Fire Department, which is a special district, dissolving, and the main reason is an issue that we're facing as a city here with volunteer firemen. Theirs is almost all volunteer, and Obamacare, and the expenses that come with having volunteers, and they're actually thinking they may dissolve because of that issue. I will report back on that, on any more information I find out about that. Also, the City of Morro Bay's sphere of influence, which may become much smaller there, looking at a place to site their sewage treatment plant along Morro Road, and depending on where it is, they may grow quite a bit out towards the east. So that also may be of interest and may affect the city somewhere down the line. And in terms of the RAC and the water issues liaison, I know we've already discussed various water issues with the Atascadero becoming its own sub-basin separate from the Paso Robles sub-basin, and our wish to have that be so. But also the county is looking at the high-severity water basins within the county and trying to decide what to do with Paso Robles Basin. They may lump us in as well. There are other basins that are having issues in the South County, particularly the Santa Maria Basin, where there is a deficit. And one that was a surprise to me that is in the Edna Valley right next to the city of San Luis Obispo. There are vineyards out there, as we know, and they're having similar issues as they have had in the Paso Robles area that could affect it. So just wanted to spotlight those to keep your eye on that in the news. Thank you.
Thank you. No report.
No report. Well, I should be able to be brief. We did attend a lunch meeting with Paso and Atascadero Chamber and their corporate sponsors in preparation for the presentation we'll be doing later on the economic forecast, but did have Mike Manchek present from EVC, and always a pleasure, and, you know, speaking with him more afterwards, you know, folks are very much focused on Atascadero with our strategic opportunities and do feel like, yeah, we've been behind, but we're in a very good position more than most for some forward momentum. And kind of segues a little bit over onto the topic of Morro Bay, because that's where we had our last Mayor's Roundtable meeting. They did a good presentation on their economic development plan, and they, I think, are going through the same process we are, and they're very much focused on the city strategically putting properties together. They are investing in that and making it happen, because they're looking at similar issues as to us. They have small parcels like we've had, and in a lot of the smaller communities, Grover Beach, similarly. Interesting discussion at the with EVC, though, as you may well know, with the broadband potential, I'd never even realize of why we are actually Central Coast is a very much a hot spot for the technology, because of that gentle coast into the ocean. It's much easier to lay the cabling, that actually we're a hub more than almost anywhere else along the coast. So it turns out Morro Bay and really Grover Beach are significant hubs. It kind of comes up there, goes along the railroad tracks north and south, and talked about if you could ever make that link, especially at Morro Bay, and would be a good tie-in with us. It would really have huge opportunities, because they were talking about the difference in access in our area compared to even in the Bay Area. We'd actually become competitive in that. So that's something to keep in mind, and partially why I've kept reaching out to Morro Bay, not only through the T-bid in our city, focusing on with Morro Bay's tourism. We want to really emphasize the E.G. Lewis Highway and that connectivity. I very much supported on SLOCOG funding for their interchange at 41 and 1, much like we did at our 101 and 41. So they're going to be getting some good improvements, probably the last funded project coming up through SLOCOG, but I think that'll be advantageous at that corner. I'll be curious to see what they do on their wastewater treatment plant, because having been on the Regional Water Quality Control Board. It's such a very high water table, and with ground, with us, the seawater intrusion and, from Los Osos and Morro Bay, it's real tricky. So, again, we are very fortunate in Atascadero with what I believe is a sub-basin and with our wastewater treatment plant. It's actually very simple, gravity-fed, but it's compared to what other cities are struggling with. That is a major economic advantage we have in our community. I have to apologize again to Councilman Kelly, the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I was hoping to transition to Bob on that board sooner than later, though it's been pointed out to me that their transition is actually in the summertime, and that if I was to leave earlier, it would require a special election because I'm on the executive committee, being the past chairperson. So I've been lobbied to, well, just wait, one or two more meetings, because similar to the APCD, many of these regional boards have a precarious balance. And when you kind of start changing the positions, it takes more time than normal to transition. So they only meet every other month. So I'm suggesting that the last meeting was primarily the evaluation of the executive director. The next meeting, we could look at, as we were going to try to do, maybe going down together. I think we might even be, I do want to formally go ahead and have Bob become the alternate immediately, if you don't mind, and then I will exit out after that. And I think what we might be able to do is, even though you'd be the alternate, you could sit in, take the next meeting as the alternate, but then technically I'm not stepping down. I won't force them to do a special election. And then I think in the summer, I can get my plaque and go on the road, and you can applaud, and I'll walk out the door. So we'll coordinate on that anyway. But I think we're fine on that. I won't report anymore on Council of Governments and RTA. That's same old, same old. We're fighting over dollars, and we'll see how that all goes. Any other staff input before we? Call, we are adjourned for the good of the cause. Thank you.